There we go. All right. Got the drink set up. I'll give that beautiful Guinness just a second to cascade. Welcome to the QTR Podcast. Got a banger for you today. My man, Sang Lucci, is in the motherfucking house. First and foremost, want to shout out my patrons, the people that make this podcast possible. The podcast does not happen without the kind folks that have signed up on Patreon to support this podcast. Thank you guys so fucking much. I really appreciate it. First and foremost, my buddy over at The Trader's Path, Pete. The Trader's Path is a brand new online investor advocacy service, and advocacy is the goddamn word I'm looking for. Man, I gotta get some of that Guinness in me quick. Investor advocacy service that gives you investor education, investor advocacy, daily watch lists, live streams of their day trading. He created it because he got sick and tired of the bullshit day trading services that he was dealing with on a daily basis. Yes, the kind that you see sponsored on YouTube and your Facebook feed. Not gonna mention names, but if you want, I'll mention names. Probably talking about guys like Tim Sykes and Jason Bond. He started because he wanted to avoid that nonsense. Now, I can't prove those guys are doing anything nefarious, but do I trust him? The answer is fuck no, I don't. So neither does Pete, and he started The Trader's Path, and there is a link to that in my podcast description. This podcast also brought to you by my friends over at Rumorhound. Rumorhound.ai is artificial intelligence-based software that is going to help you sort through mergers and acquisition rumors that you see on a daily basis as a trader. They come up in the mainstream media. They come up on Twitter. They come up in chat rooms. And Rumorhound runs everything through their proprietary AI-based system. It looks at the potential of a transaction closing. It looks at the credibility of the rumor. It looks at the credibility of the source. It looks at the financials, and it spits back to you what it thinks is a simple recommendation about whether or not there is a likelihood of a transaction closing. So Rumorhound's an awesome tool to have in your toolbox of trading tools. Just gonna say tools again for the fourth time. Tools. All right. Rumorhound.ai, check it out. It's in my podcast description. This podcast is also brought to you by my friends over at Hella Bacon. Hella Bacon's a bunch of guys that shoot machine guns out of helicopters. If you need to know anything else, you can contact them. Please don't bother me with questions. I got a lot of things to do, like take a sip out of this Guinness, which I'm going to do right now. Oh, man, that's good. All right, going forward, two other pieces of information I got to give you. One, I am not a financial advisor. This is not financial advice. And two, do your research elsewhere. Do your drinking here, but do your research elsewhere is what I'm trying to say. Man, I'm fucking this whole intro up. I don't even care. There's a 2-drink minimum, all right? I'm too busy adhering by it to tell you guys about it. I don't have time to tell you guys about everything. Just get some drinks in you, especially when we got Sang Lucci on the line. I also want to, real quick before we start, shout out some of my newest patrons, guys like Ed Roop, Michael Marino, Janos Zeverinos, David Hansen, Mr. J.K. Cunningham, what's up, brother? Andrew White, Edward Blake, Ginger Soros, Eric Larson, thank you guys so much. Some of my longest patrons, guys like Jonathan McNeil, Chris Humphrey is still down, Pennyman has been down since April of this year. I still see you, brother. My homeboy Gerald's in the house, Coyote Blog is still in the house. How about Money Lobster? Still in the house. I see you on Twitter all the time. What's going on? The Tesla Q podcast is still supporting. I appreciate you guys very much. Wouter Verlinden, thank you, my friend. Jeff DeLacqua, what's going on? Matt Merrill, I still see you. I feel like you get a mention every episode, you greedy fuck. Robert Cope from Cope Systems and the Fed is still in the house. Cooper Sinclair is still in the house. My homeboy Kubico checking in. What's up? How about SK, what's going on? I see you. My buddy Mike, my buddy Michael Kantowski also. And finally, some of the patrons that also make this podcast possible are people like Corvus Gold, my buddy Ryan over there, corvusgold.com. Gold is kicking ass, and I hope you guys are too. My friend Piggly Wiggly, always here. Investors Underground, my buddy Nate over there, Chris Boas, Chris Bede, Ken R., Nicholas Parks, Matthew Zimmer, Russ Valenti, what's up? And the one, the only, motherfucking Sang Lucci. Sang Lucci is actually a sponsor of the podcast. He's a patron. I love the shit out of him and his brother Charlie. I've known these guys for 6-7 years. They're some of the sharpest motherfuckers in the industry. The dude throws sharp elbows when it comes to the options market. He knows what he's doing. Usually at the beginning of the podcast, I tell you about all the cool shit he's working on. But He's my guest on the line right now, so I don't have to do any of that. You can do my work for me, Mr. Lucci. What's going on?
Sweet, sweet. What's going on? Thanks for having me, bro. Thanks for having me.
I'm stoked that you're here, man. Is this the first time you've been on since I've seen you in New York?
Yes. Yes, it's the first time. It's been a while. I mean, to be honest, the days are going by so quickly. I mean, it's the end of July now. We only got five months left in the year, bro. This year's going by quick, bro.
Is it? Are you having a cocktail right now?
No, I actually am not. And unfortunately, I have to tell you, I killed the drinking, man. I killed the drinking.
Did you?
For a little bit, bro.
Good for you, man. Well, when we went to dinner, yeah. You told me that you had stopped. This is when I saw you in Manhattan in June. You told me that you weren't drinking because you were preparing for your ayahuasca expedition into the woods. And you just shook it, huh? You kept it off.
Yes.
Good for
yes.
you.
So they recommend before you do this because, you know, it's a pretty intense, you know, it's a pretty intense situation. I know we're going to get into all this kind of stuff, but, you know, they want you to be at your best because, you know, you're going deep in and you're, you know, the alcohol is kind of, it kind of puts up the barriers, you know, the alcohol kind of puts up the ego, boosts the ego, and you know, it doesn't fit. You know, it doesn't fit. It's not meant to be there. So they kind of get you, or at least they recommend for you to get off a lot of this stuff. But you know, a lot of the people that came down there too, as well, like, you know, they snuck in a couple of drinks too, and you know,
well, it puts up some barriers and it takes other ones down.
Well, exactly. And you know what, to be honest, like, and let's just have a conversation too about the alcohol. Like, bro, when I was younger, I mean, you know, man, you go to college in the States, the drinking I didn't even know one kid that I went to school with that wasn't out and, you know, drinking and just getting absolutely shit faced, you know, for frat parties, this party, that party, you know, that was just a thing. And then you almost got so used to it that, you know, it was just what you did, you know? When you went out with your friends, it was just what you did. And I never questioned it. I never questioned it. But now when I look at it, as soon as I hit that second J-Mo, bro, that second Jameson on the rocks, that's like when you start to, you know, things are definitely different. You start to say things a little bit more aggressively. You're definitely a larger ego version of yourself. And obviously it facilitates a lot of things, right? It facilitates, you know, the exchange of conversation between, you know, let's say reluctant parties. what would be reluctant party? It facilitates this conversation. And once I hit that third J-Mo, bro, bad decisions just start to happen, bro. Just bad decisions are about to happen. But it's almost like we want those things to happen. When we're younger and when we're in the mix and we're not questioning them,
or
and
now, 2 years like, ago in Las Vegas,
or 2 years
when right? when we
I
were
act
younger,
like, I act like this shit. Exactly, I act like this shit is so long ago, like legit, you know, a year ago.
The listeners need to know that I've been on the other side of those involuntary, reluctant conversations. He's not talking about picking up chicks at a club. He's talking about annoying me at the hotel in Las Vegas.
You know, and now, bro, I'm just kind of at this place where I'm questioning everything, man. I'm just questioning literally everything, and now I'm just kind of like, okay, is this where is this gonna get me? You know,
right.
I'll kind of question the end goal of it versus just diving in head first, just like into a trade, let's say short Beyond Meat, where diving in first, asking fucking questions later, like, maybe I shouldn't have shorted that early, you know, and then getting yourself into all these issues that you have to speak for at the end of the day. I mean, bro, I would have to wake up the next day and I'd have to either apologize to somebody for some shit that I said when I was drunk, you know, or I'd have to clean up some kind of mess that I made from the night before, just being drunk as shit. And not to mention all the freaking times that we shouldn't have been driving. I mean, I hate to admit it, but, you know, and not that many people admit it, but, bro, I got behind the wheel many times when I was drunk as shit and I shouldn't have been behind that fucking wheel, bro. You know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, man. And, that, and it's like nowadays with Uber, I can't even imagine. I mean, not that I ever did that really, but I mean,
yeah.
A couple of times, probably more than any person should. But, you know, you're in your early 20s, you're trying to figure shit out. And you know what the funny story is? I actually got a DUI in college because a friend of mine had walked me and my friend had walked to the bar. Okay, we walked up on like a Tuesday to watch a Phillies game, and the game wound up going into like 15 or 16 innings. And we knew the bartenders at the bar. The bar was called 15 North in Westchester, so I don't even think it's there anymore. But we knew the bartenders there. It was like our favorite spot to go to. And somebody said, you know, hey, every time we go into another inning, we're going to do a shot or something, you know. And lucky for me, I never got huge into like ripping shots. Like I knew after the first couple of times that I drank too much, like that was a really shitty feeling. And, you know, more so now as you get older, I mean, I just, you know, like you said, two JMOs on the rocks. And
so you would, So you would stop yourself?
Well, no, not as often as I would have liked to have. But, so we walked to the bar, right? We wound up having a bunch of drinks and, you know, way too many for a Tuesday or whatever it was. And we walked back home from the bar, and as I was getting ready to go into my house, I was at my house, I noticed that my car was on the wrong side of the street for street cleaning. And I was like, well, that's going to be a $30 ticket. And when you're in college, $30 is like fucking $1 million. You're just like, where the fuck am I going to come up with $30? So in my fucking super smart drunk brain, I was like, I'll just move the car behind the house here into the driveway. And that'll be that. No problem. No harm. No foul. Well, 100 feet later down the road, I probably had a total of like 400 feet that I needed to drive. And I had pulled into, you have to make three turns to get behind the house. So you're going from in front of the house, you have to go down the street, make a left turn, and then make an immediate left to get into the alley to go behind your house. I made the first left turn, and when I went to make the second left turn into the alley, there was this enormous pothole that everybody knew about. It was like a fucking sinkhole. And I did what I always did, which was drove around it. But there was a police officer right behind me, and he saw me take that turn, and I guess he thought I took the turn wide. And so I gunned in the alley and get into the back of where my house is, into the driveway. So I'm ahead of him by a little bit, but I see him flash his lights on. And I'm thinking, if I could just get into the back door of my house here, everything's good. And got out of the car, ran up to the back door. The back door was the bedroom of one of my roommates. And like for the first time all semester, the back door was locked. And by then the cops had pulled up, you know, behind me, and they're like, hey, can we talk to you for a second? And I was like, ah, fuck. You know, and then you try to level with the guy. You think like, oh, maybe this guy will cut me some slack. I said, listen, we just walked to 15 right. North and walked home. You know, I just wanted to move my car for street cleaning. Well, you know, 2 hours later, you're in a fucking jail cell. Westchester cops, I think they knew me by name at that point, too. So I wasn't getting any charity from them. There's a story.
Yep. Bad situation and, you know, bad time. Like, bro, when I was in high school, I was one of the only kids in this goddamn high school, man. And every time I drove down this one main route in the town, I got pulled over, bro. I would get pulled over all the freaking time, and they would always search me. Now, granted, I got caught once with, you know, some weed on me. And at the time, of course, it was a cardinal sin to have freaking weed on you, especially, you know, especially in some of these places. And once that one incident happened, every time I went through this city, man, it wouldn't stop. They were always at one's trap on that road, and they would bust me every single time just because they knew too. You know, oh shit, let's give it a shot and let's see what we can come up with, man.
Yep.
And luckily, one time, you know, one more time after that, they caught me with some shit, but that was it. Just wrong place.
A brown man driving around with some brown weed.
Brown as fuck, man. Back in the day, too, I had some brown ass, oregano ass weed to sell, bro.
Oh, man.
Indeed.
It's funny too. Indeed. I don't know if you saw last night. I hate to go into it immediately, but my growing woman crush, Tulsi Gabbard, talking to Kamala Harris last night at the debate, about.
Yo, I saw the clip you posted, man. She's pretty. She's kind of hot, man. I can see why that's a growing love for you, man. I can see why that turns you on, bro.
Well, there's a lot of hot women out there, but she makes sense too, which is really the sexiest thing for me, right? Like,
well, that's what I mean. Yeah, and she went direct to it with no emotion too.
Uh-huh.
She was calling her out with no emotion, and it was like some serious shit she was calling her out on. So I was like, damn, okay.
So you locked up 1,500 people for marijuana, and then you laughed about it when she went on the Breakfast Club. She was talking to Charlamagne, and you know,
right,
they were asking her. Meanwhile, her stupid ass went on to the Breakfast Club, and they, you know, they were like, "Oh, well, what did you listen to in college?" And she was like, "Yeah, you know, Tupac, Biggie," and like they weren't even around when she was in college. Somebody wrote an article about that. Like, the two of them weren't even on the scene. They're fucking full of shit, man. These politicians, they really are.
Yep, but plus she was on the Breakfast Club. She felt in a safe place, so she was talking that shit, man. And Dulce just called her out on it, and that was pretty intense to watch, man.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And isn't it crazy now? It's only been probably two decades, right? And you look at what a minor crime marijuana is. I remember when I was in high school, you know, if you had a little marijuana, it was a huge deal. Like, you were the drug kingpin scumbag of your high school.
Bro.
Now everybody smokes weed, and heroin's the problem.
Bro, so I got caught. I think I was like 18. I got caught with like a pound. I think I got caught with almost like a pound of weed, and I had a digital scale, and I had, you know, I had baggies on me or whatever. But they knew the kid that I was about to go sell to. And I don't know how they put two and two together, but they got me on the road. I was walking to his place, and I had a backpack on me. And you know, the cop told me to open it. I was like, nah, I'm not opening it. I know my rights. I'm not opening this bag. You know, you can't look in this bag. You know, luckily I even knew to say that. Like, I don't even know how I knew to say that at 18 years old. I have no idea. But maybe I heard it from one of my other boys.
Imagine the stench coming out of that bag. He's like, that's a little something called probable cause, by the way, just so you know, when you fucking
stink. There you go.
Stink.
There you go. So he opens it. He opened the bag, found it all, right? I get busted. I go, you know, they put me in 2 days to lock up, right? I'm waiting for my arraignment. And you know, then the case goes to I get a court appointed lawyer. This woman knew nothing, bro. This woman knew nothing. Luckily, the judge threw the case out because the cops searched me illegally, and I walked, bro. But that would have been at least a year or two for me in Billerica in Massachusetts, bro, which is a maximum, which is one of the largest jails they have here in Massachusetts.
I'm hoping the statute of limitations on all this stuff has passed, right?
Indeed.
I don't want this
bro.
Podcast to be used as evidence against either one of us. That would be a bad way to get a headline.
So after that, you know, and ironically, and I'm going to throw this story out too, like one of my boys from, he went to Northeastern. You know, we had a friend that was always working at the club. He was selling, you know, I don't know what he was selling at the time, but he would always brag about this money that he had, right? And he had this money hidden somewhere or something like that. Even after he passed, and I'm gonna give you the whole backstory. His sister was in the newspaper, like trying to find this stash. Nobody ever ended up finding it, apparently. But he was well known on campus. Everybody knew of this story. So he gets, you know, his house gets broken into, his girl gets tied up, he gets shot in the leg, right? He gets shot in the leg. He died from blood loss on the way to the hospital, and they were trying to find this stash or whatever. And that's after that happened, I think it was about 19. After that happened, I was like, okay. This is a very dumb enterprise. This is an extremely dumb enterprise. Because you want to know what? At the end of it, it's not like either one of us needed to do this shit. We just did it because, you know, we just did it because at the school people needed it, and we ended up being in cool situations, and we ended up, you know, it fed our egos. It totally fed our egos, and it made us, you know, it made us cool. It made us wanted, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, it's not like we needed it. It's not like we needed it to freaking do it for money or anything like that.
Right.
So, you know, after that, it was just like, okay, let's actually decide to work hard and spend our time on something.
Yeah, our message is not to become drug dealers, especially when you can just go out and buy pot now. You know, I mean, that's a wrap. We've pretty much, we've won the war that we were, that at least my generation was fighting back, and, you know, generations that have come before us as well. But, you know, when we're in Nevada, you can go there and just buy whatever you want. And soon that's going to be the case in all states. And the shit that you can't go out and buy is really the shit you don't want anyways. You know what I mean? I mean, with the exception of maybe mushrooms, which you will get into hallucinogens in a minute. Because I know we got a lot to talk about there.
Exactly. And, you know, and staying on the drug topic, I mean, the drugs have never left us. They've never left us since God knows when, since hundreds of freaking years ago, and they're never leaving us now. Now we're just in a world and an environment now where, you know, it's a commodity. It's a total commodity here, and it's amazing what I see now. Bro, I was walking through this bullshit mall where my parents live, and half the signs in the mall were talking about the magic, and these were the words that they used, the magic of CBD. Check out the new CBD store and all our CBD magical products for the cures on your this, that, and everything. And I couldn't freaking believe it, man. I'm at this bullshit mall that I grew up going to, bro, that I legit grew up going to.
That I've been arrested at.
Exactly. I've been arrested in the parking lot. In the parking lot, because I used to work. I worked at every place in that mall, bro. I worked at the Spanish restaurant. I worked at the ice cream store. I was selling watches up in there. I worked at both the Macy's in there. I worked at HMV Records. You remember HMV Records before they killed all the record stores? Because now you ain't buying no CDs or whatever. I worked there. Everywhere, man, and I remember this one time I got arrested outside just smoking weed on my freaking break, and I got arrested because they had cameras in the parking lot. And now just to see that shit in there, man, it's ridiculous, man. And then you know what I often think about? I think about all the people that are locked up in jail for, you know, serving 7 years, serving 10 years for fucking weed, bro. And that's what I think about immediately. I'm like, is this real, bro? Is this fucking real,
and
man?
And there's people in jail for fucking manslaughter for 5 years, rape for 2 years, you know what I mean? And you got guys that are just locked up just because they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. They got the wrong cop and the wrong fucking judge. And it's still, man, if I'm on the subway now and I smell somebody smoking weed next to me, or if I'm, you know, walking down the street and I smell something and I just see somebody burning one next to me, I mean, the first thing I think of is, the point of the matter is there's a second where I'm like, oh, like, that person, like, I'm on alert, you know? I'm like, oh, that person's got to hide that. Or like, oh, where's that coming from? And like, you know, you immediately go into this, like, wow, that's illegal. You can't do that. And it's like, wow, no, it's not, you know? Like, it's really strange, man. You have that kind of ingrained in you, I guess, from 20 years ago. We made a hell of a lot of progress in 20 years.
You know what the dope thing that you just alluded to, that I'm not even sure you meant it, but we're going to talk about this because we're going to end up with the ayahuasca. It's like, all the shit that you're subconsciously programmed to do because that's what you know instinctually, that's either been passed down or something that you learned while you were doing whatever you're doing. And it's those things, it's those habits, it's those subconscious things that we do that are the subject and the topic of all my conversations now. It's like, why do we feel this way? Why do I automatically feel this way? And it's all those little survival mechanisms that we do. And you literally just talked about one of them. I feel the same way. Bro, as soon as I see a cop behind me, like I get all rigid, man. My stomach fucking tightens up, bro. Like, shit happens to me. Shit happens to my body. Shit happens to my mind. I go into fucking survival mode, you know? I grab the seatbelt if I don't have it on. I'm like, oh, shit. What did I do? It's like I take mental stock of all the decisions I made 5 minutes before just to see if I did anything wrong that this motherfucker could pull me over for, you know? And it's those fucking habits, bro, that kill us in trading, in life, bro, in all this shit. And that's like the huge reason why I wanted to do this ayahuasca, bro. That's like, it's crazy. Yeah. So that was a great transition right there. You didn't even know you did that shit right,
right?
There.
Sometimes I just wave to cops too. Like a bunch of the guys that I train jiu-jitsu with are cops, and it, you know, it's cool to see them out of uniform because you get to know them. And you get to know. I used to, you know, we know there's a lot of dickhead cops out there, and there's a lot of great cops out there, and
right.
You know, it's cool to get to know these guys, and I have a couple of police officers in my family that I respect immensely, that I know are good people, that are honorable people, that, you know, strive to do the right thing every day. But what I just started doing a couple of years ago is, I you know, if I see a police officer, sometimes I'll just wave to him. You know, if I'm driving past him or whatever. As a matter of fact, when I lived in Niagara Falls, I was driving down Military Boulevard one morning on my way to work, and an unmarked police car got right up on my ass. He was in an SUV, right? And it had those little family kind of stickers on the back of it to make it look like, you know, it was somebody's SUV. But you can tell right away that it's a undercover cop car or a unmarked car, because I could still see kind of like the light bar, and there were a couple other things that gave it away. But they do things to these SUVs now to try and make them look like they're just regular family SUVs, right? So this guy gets behind me, and I'm doing the speed limit. I'm not speeding at all. He gets behind me and he pulls right up on my ass, like right up on my ass. So I'm like, fuck this. This is a one lane road. And I'm like, I'm not letting this guy fucking get behind me like this. So I start speeding up.
Right.
And, you know, then I start going maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 miles an hour over the speed limit. And as soon as I pull away from him, he pulls me over. So I'm like, all right. He comes over to the driver's side. He said, do you know why I pulled you over? I said, why? He said, well, you were exceeding the speed limit there. I said, well, you were fucking 6 inches from my car. I said, you pulled up right up on my ass there, so I had no choice but to speed up. I said, I didn't know, right. You know, I knew he was a cop, but I told him, I didn't know who you were. I didn't know it was a police officer. You know, by virtue of the fact that you got so close to me, I was left with no choice but to speed up. There was nowhere to turn off, whatever. And I didn't give him the business, but I was firm in the way that I said it. You know, and he went back to the truck and he checked. He came back. All right, have a nice day. You know, I'm like, what are you fucking doing to people? Like,
Indeed, bro. Indeed.
Anyways, so should we touch on ayahuasca?
My man.
Should
we
go there?
We have to, bro.
So for those that don't know.
We have to.
Lucci just went to Costa Rica and drank some ayahuasca. If you don't know what ayahuasca is, it is a pretty potent hallucinogen. He went down there looking for some answers, and everybody's kind of been asking him how it went, and he decided to come on here and talk to me about it. So for everybody that's been waiting, why don't you explain what ayahuasca is, why you went, and what you found out?
Sure. And again, like for some of the psychedelic community out here who is, you know, very well versed in the different psychedelics that are out there, the natural ones, the chemical ones. Like I just kind of did this randomly, and like, and bro, have you done mushrooms before? Have you done like acid? Have you done any of this shit? You've done mushrooms before, yes?
I've had mushrooms before, yeah. That's a yes.
All right. That is a yes. Okay. So, like, when I did, like, I did mushrooms, too, like, a couple times in high school and a couple times in college, but...
Oh, I thought you meant this week.
Well, no, absolutely. This week, like a couple of weeks ago, after I finished ayahuasca, like, I did some mushrooms. I'm also trying to start microdosing and things like that, but we can talk about that towards the tail end of this, because there's a huge growing psychedelic community that, you know, the research coming out of these communities is absolutely insane on, you know, how you can dose for you know, optimal focus or, you know, relaxation, blah blah blah, all this kind of other shit. You know, so I had a little bit of experience with it before, but as a kid and in college too, like you're doing it for the visualization. Like I did it because I wanted to see cool shit.
Right.
You know, I remember this one time I took mushrooms and I was sitting in this big field, and I would open my eyes and I would see this beautiful blue sky, and there was no clouds there, whatever. I would close my eyes, and all of a sudden there was a big giant bubble around me, And there was hundreds of people around me, like, pointing at me and laughing at me. And I remember this was like one of the worst trips. Shit I'll never forget. And I did this for like 45 minutes straight, bro. I would open my eyes, I'd see this beautiful clear sky, and then I would close them, and then there would be this giant bubble around me, and people were just pointing at me and laughing at me. And I was just like, what the fuck, man? I got to get home. And it was the worst idea for me to get in my car, and I tried to get the fuck home. I was on the highway, just basically swerving on the highway, and in my head, everybody was looking at me and pointing at me and being like, look at this fucking crazy dude, you know, on the road. I had to pull over several times just to see if I could get, you know, control of myself. And I remember my muscles tightened up. I couldn't even fucking breathe. Finally, I just whipped into this freaking gas station and just sat there for like 2 hours to breathe and tried to get, you know, back to square one. My point in this is that I never took psychedelics with an intention. And that's what ayahuasca was for me. And that's like kind of the new way that I'm looking at psychedelics. It's like, what is the intent that you're going to put out there or try to get out of your next trip versus just taking them? Did you ever watch Entourage, bro? You remember when they all tripped in that Entourage shit, and they were trying to figure out which movie Vincent should do, if it was like a dog movie or some other shit? You remember that? You remember that episode?
I didn't watch Entourage, so no. But I'll take your word for it.
There was this one episode on Entourage where they were trying to figure out like what movie Vincent should do next. So they were like, they all looked at each other. They were like, mushrooms, and let's go to fucking, you know, let's go to this place in the woods to figure it out. And it never really clicked with me until I went down and did ayahuasca. So ayahuasca is actually a plant. It's a plant medicine. So it's existed for a long, long, long fucking time. And I don't know why all of a sudden it just kind of popped back up in the world. Maybe because, you know, now it costs money to actually do these kinds of things.
And what happened was Graham Hancock started talking about it on the Joe Rogan podcast. And I think that kind of launched it back into the mainstream when he was talking about how he would go down to Peru and take ayahuasca. I think that's what did it.
There you go. There's other forms of this medicine called Iboga. There's some other things as well. And it's ironic you said the Joe Rogan thing. When I was down at this particular retreat, at the same retreat I was at the same hotel I was at, there were mad dudes that were wearing Rogan merch, bro. There were mad dudes down there that were wearing Rogan merch. And I was like, oh, damn, okay. And then I went on Rogan, and I started to see, like, okay, Rogan's a big proponent of this.
Oh, yeah, he's got a huge following from the psychedelic community, huge. Because he's a huge advocate for DMT, you know, that dimethyltryptamine, and taking that. And just in general, taking hallucinogens to get, you know, neurons firing that normally wouldn't be firing on your day-to-day.
Exactly. So to expand on a lot of that, like, we'll get into the actual, you know, the actual effects or whatever, but I didn't even know what it was, really. And my girl wanted me to come down there with her. She wanted me to go down there and she was trying to convince me for a long time to go down there. And I was just kind of wrapped up in trading. I was wrapped up in all the shit I was dealing with going down to Puerto Rico and making sure I had things set down there, you know, with the lawyers and everything. And I had tons of shit going on. And I was just like, all right, whatever. You know, we'll go. Finally, I just went ahead and booked it. But I think something happened to me while I was down in Puerto Rico. And it was kind of like this realization that, like, I would get so frustrated of where I was at in my life, and I'd get mad at myself and, like, depressed about it, too, like, really, really easily. And I realized, like, for the last, like, 10 – my professional life, right, which is basically, what, 10 years, 12 years, I've always had these huge, huge ups and downs where I wouldn't be satisfied with where I was, so I pressed it and risked more. I ended up failing on something, whatever venture I was going after, you know, whether it was trading or, you know, whatever other business. I'd end up seeing some failure, and then it would kind of throw me into a tailspin, and then I would always find myself climbing back out of a fucking hole, bro.
Right.
And I would do this, like, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Finally, I end up in Puerto Rico, like, after, you know, a really, really solid year, and I kind of sat back and I was like, yo, if this is my trend, then I know the shitstorm is about to come here. How do I now start to prevent myself
right.
from getting into the situations in the first fucking place?
Right.
So that was the like that was the seed, and I was like, okay,
you wanted to jar your thought process into a different fucking lane, like a railroad train when the conductor pulls the switch and the train fucking diverts down another path than the one that it was going on.
Exactly, bro. Exactly. And I wanted to, and you know what else too, bro? I would always have these visions of myself doing things that I know I'm capable of doing, but I would always push those things aside because of my daily bullshit or maybe it was fear or maybe it was friggin' whatever the fuck it was. And I would just push it off to the side. I'd be like, okay, I'll deal with this later. I'll deal with this later. I'll deal with this later. And then eventually I was just like, okay, what the fuck, man? You can't just keep going back and up and down, up and down, up and down. If you're actually going to hit some of these places, you can't be taking L's like this. If
right.
you're going to take an L, like, at least save yourself from the pain and save yourself from how long it's going to take you to get back up. Because anytime I took an L before, you know, it would take me 6 months to a year, sometimes even longer, to get back into the right mental state so that I could crush some shit again. It would take me that long just to get over everything that happened and to get over where I thought I should be in life and all that bullshit that we tend to throw on ourselves when we're unhappy with where we are or we're unhappy with what we're doing and all that kind of stuff. So all that shit started to bubble up. And then I looked at her and I was like, fuck it. Let's just book it, right? So I booked it for August. I still didn't even know, like, technically what this shit was. And you gotta realize, like, my ego is ginormous, bro. My ego has always been fucking ginormous, man. It's always kind of just like we were talking about those survival mechanisms. Like, my ego, I didn't realize how much my ego had taken over my subconscious completely. You know, had taken over the way I speak, had taken over the way I think, taken over my decisions, taken over the things that I thought the things that I thought I wanted in life. My ego fucking took over. I didn't realize it until after I took the ayahuasca and after I was in a 10-hour physical battle with my ego on a fucking mattress with a damn bucket filled with black puke and tears on the fucking bed, bro. That's how intense my battle with my ego was. But before I went down there, like, all this shit was brewing, so I was like, fuck it, this is the time. And I had always been reading books on, you know, changing habits and, you know, fucking, you know, all those motivational freaking books that we all read, those self-improvement books and shit. So I was always on that path, but it still wasn't giving me the smack in the face that I needed. And that's what I realized, like, what ayahuasca was.
Well, there's a huge difference between reading a book that you're going to try and comprehend and take on what they suggest, but just do that within the normal umbrella of your basic day-to-day thought process and your basic day-to-day consciousness and saying, oh, all right, I'm going to implement some changes. There's a huge difference between that and putting some fucking chemicals in your body that's going to tell you, ready or not, motherfucker, change is coming, because we're going to get into the, you know, we're going to get into your neurons and we're going to wake some shit up you didn't even know existed in your head.
Exactly. And it's like, and it's one thing that I came out from it. It's like resonance. It's like, when do you actually resonate with the shit that you already know? Like we already know what we need to do with ourselves, right? We already know all the shit from our past that is haunting us and holding us back. We already know all this stuff, right? But people go 20 years, 10 years, fucking 30 years without actually addressing those things,
right?
Or without actually really resonating with those things too. And that's what the fucking ayahuasca was all about. So anyways, we get down there, right? I'm in Costa Rica 2 days before, like, I start to actually research this shit. And I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to be puking. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be this. I'm going to be that. And I started to get a little anxious, bro. So we get to the airport, and everybody's, you know, everybody that's going to this particular place, everybody's on the same shuttle. And now, like, now you're starting to realize, like, you're about to go into this. You're about to go into this world where, yes, there's people around you. Yes, they're all doing the same thing. But there's a little bit of fear. There's a little bit of fear growing. There's a little bit of anxiety growing. And everybody's feeling the same way. Everybody's like, oh, shit, you know? And what I really enjoyed about it was that everybody was there to face to finally face some kind of fear. I mean, bro, right. there was women that were down there that have been raped several times. There was people who were down there that were addicts on heroin, methadone. You know, there was people down there with stories that you wouldn't even fucking imagine, Chris, man. I couldn't even believe it. I couldn't even believe some of these fucking stories. And I'm sitting there like, damn, I'm just trying to better myself over here. I feel like, you know, I feel like an asshole here sitting here. You know, all I have is daddy issues and freaking, you know, I'm trying to work out the, you know, how to become the best version of myself. But again, like, everybody's working on something. Everybody was there to reconnect with something. So you get down there, right? And it's all vegan meals that they're serving. They're immediately doing, and we did a retreat, right? So you're not, you, some of you guys who go down to Peru or go down to, they're even doing this shit in Florida. You might not have the experience that I did. Like, I did a week and a half retreat where we did yoga every single morning. We're meditating. We're doing breath work every single evening. And then we're going into ceremony, basically, where, you know, the shaman is blessing the medicine that we're about to take. He's giving out doses. There's whole processes for every single one of these doses. You know, he has his crew coming around checking on everybody, making sure they're okay. And if anybody needs a little private service where, you know, they got some demons they need to freaking work out, they're there blowing smoke in their face and freaking fanning them. And, you know, all this kind of stuff is happening while you're in ceremony and you're legit tripping for a good 8 fucking hours. You're legit tripping for 8 hours into the morning where finally you get up. Everybody's, you know, the medicine has worked its way out, and now everybody's just congregating around talking about what they went through. And then the next day you'd go to workshops where you'd talk about this shit. You'd talk about this, you know, what you're seeing. You'd talk about, you know, literally everything. And then you'd hear stories from everybody else going through what they were going through. And, bro, everybody was reconnecting with dreams they lost. They thought they forgot. People were remembering things that they thought they forgot, that they were just parts of their brain they were able to access with memories that gave them clarity on so much shit. And, you know, people were just amazed, bro. Fucking amazed, bro. So that was like the first part of it. And then they also did the colonics too. So that means you're flushing out your system. They'll spray some salt water up your ass here, and you'll just shit that stuff out before you go into freaking ceremony. So it's a little bit easier on you, you know. But I mean, again, like that was the basics of it. And bro, it was intense, man. It was intense. The shit that I saw while I was tripping, it reconnected me with, you know, my childhood, basically, how I grew up, why I am the way that I am, why I say the things that I fucking do, why I have these survival mechanisms because of my father, my grandfather. You know, I was able to forgive my father because I would blame him for everything, bro. I'd blame him for just me being the way I was, and the parts that I hated about myself, I would blame him. But it wasn't none of this shit was his fault. You know, I felt like unloved as a kid, but in reality, like, that's just what he knew. That's we got third world parents here. That's what they knew. Their grandfather, you know, my grandfather was the same, and they just kind of passed it down. So it's not that he didn't, it's not that he didn't love me. It's just that he just didn't express it in a way that I could understand. You know what I'm saying? So I was able to forgive him, kind of move on from that shit. You know, there were so many other things I was able to do just in there, bro. So, I mean, let me not ramble a little bit too much, but...
That's why you're here, man. Go. Well, I got all night, brother.
Yeah. It was crazy, man. It really was crazy. And it's dope, actually, to talk to you about it because it's reconnecting me with everything that went down. I will tell you right now, the hardest part about all of it is, number one, it's like facing the shit that you don't want to face. So if there's
right.
My ego was so big that I didn't even get my sort of realization until the third day of tripping, bro. So the first day I was just seeing crazy patterns and crazy visualizations, and I was convinced, my ego convinced me even, that the answers were somewhere in all the visualizations that I was seeing. So I would close my eyes, and all of a sudden, like, you would see all the, you know, the crazy, the Matrix feed. You would see all the freaking colors. You would see all that shit. And my ego was like, okay, all I got to do is find out this little pattern right here, and maybe I can figure out what it is the message should be. And I didn't realize, like, until the third night, that it was my ego the whole time. Everything was my ego. I'm fighting my ego all the fucking time, even when I don't know it. You know, so even when people talk to me, I'm so quick to just jump back at them. I always think I'm being judged, bro.
Right.
I always think I'm being judged by everybody. It doesn't matter what somebody is saying. I think I'm being judged. So as soon as I think I'm being judged, boom, my defense mechanism comes in. I start attacking, motherfucker. I'm going to jump down your throat, and I have to prove that you're wrong,
right,
and I'm fucking right. And that's one of the biggest things that I saw as a kid growing up. I just saw that, and that was just one thing that I just did. And I didn't even know I was fucking doing it, bro. Yo, when my daughter was like 8, 9, she didn't even feel like she could talk to me, because everything she said, I'd be like, yo, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Do it this way, do it this way, do it this way. And she's a kid, bro. She's a kid. You know what I'm saying? This is a little girl here. And like, she even confessed to me. She was like, I don't want to say anything because you're just going to yell at me. And I didn't even realize it at the time. I didn't even realize what I was doing. But I was like slowly pushing the girl away from me. So like finally, I had to learn. She taught me like compassion and shit like that. And this was way before I did the fucking ayahuasca. And that shit still lives in you. You know what I'm saying? So when I did the ayahuasca, whew, bro, I'm gonna give you this one fucking story, right? I take my girl to this dope waterfall in Puerto Rico, right? We're in the rainforest, and it takes us about an hour to get up there, right? So we're at top of this fucking mountain in this dope ass waterfall, right? But we have to crawl down all these rocks. We're basically jumping around on all these rocks just to get to this fucking place. And as soon as we parked, though, to go to the waterfall, there was this group of dogs that were right. They were like stray dogs, right? It was a mom pit bull, and there was literally like 5 of her kids. And my girl is just that kind of way. She got out of the car, and she's, like, feeding them water and shit. I'm looking at them like, I ain't touching those fucking things. What are you, crazy? A fucking stray dog in Puerto Rico, man. Get the fuck out of here. I'm not getting near that shit. So I'm in the back of the Jeep, like, getting everything ready to go down to the waterfall, and all of a sudden I hear this growl, bro. I hear this fucking growl. I turn around. The mom dog is looking at me fucking with these devilish eyes. The teeth are freaking out. And this thing is ready. This thing is just ready. So I'm like, all right, that's it. I grab my bag. I go down to the freaking waterfall, and we just chill for 3 hours. My girl was tripping, too, on freaking mushrooms at the same time as well. And we leave, right? We leave. She goes ahead because she wants to feed the dog. So I'm like, all right, whatever. I get back up on the bridge. As soon as she just felt my energy, the dog just felt my energy, bro. The thing just starts growling, bro. And I'm walking past it. I walk right past it. I didn't say a fucking word. I didn't even look at it. It fucking comes right behind me, bites me on the fucking foot, and literally I end up on the ground. And I'm like, you know, kicking this dog in the face, you know, just to get it away from me. And my ego was even wanting to blame my girl for not having control of the motherfucker, but it's a fucking stray dog. Who the fuck, you know, there's no way she would have control over it. But, yo, for a week after, I couldn't figure out what the fuck that was. I couldn't figure it out. I was trying to figure it out. Like, why was this dog so fucking angry at me? Yo, I do the ayahuasca, right? I'm sitting there, sick as fuck. And by the way, like, the ayahuasca is a medicine. Like, you guys got to realize that shit. It ain't, you know, it's a medicine. You're sick, right? And the premise is you're fucking sick from yourself. You're sick from your thoughts. You are a sick motherfucker. You know
right.
what I mean? So you're sitting there on this bed. And I'm sitting there just thinking about shit, and I'll go into like the what I felt when I felt like sick, but I saw the dog, bro. I saw the dog, and it was right next to me. It was licking me. It was all love, man. And I realized at that moment, the fucking dog was me, bro. That's what I look like. That's what I look like when I jump down people's throats. People who don't even fucking know me. And I'm just there to prove them wrong. I'm there to attack. I attack first. I attack. I get defensive. That's what I fucking look like, bro. And that was one out of fucking 20 huge realizations that I had while I was doing this shit, bro. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't fucking believe it, bro.
They say, so the first time Grant Hancock mentions it on the Rogan podcast is the first episode that he's on with Rogan, which I think is like in the 100s or the 200s. It's still got the old video set up. The video's all fucked up and grainy, and like he talks about how he got his start as an author, and then he goes into talking about ayahuasca, and then there's an episode I think he does in the 300s and the 400s where he kind of follows up on it. But two of the things that he talks about that you touch on, I mean, the first is that come hell or high water, you're going to be faced with your ego head on. So even if you have the ego where you believe that you're going to be able to work through all your shit, one night, you know, I'll go in, I'll see this, it's in the patterns, you know, there's some message there, whatever, but you get flattened and put on your ass and told in kind of this relentless and really this really brutal and raw way exactly what the problem is. Here's what your fucking ego looks like, and it's in your face and you can't get away from it. And it's being given to you on the real. It's not, you know, hey, I'm doing a little work here on myself. Maybe I'll confront some of the tiny issues around the issue. It's like, boom, right in your fucking face. There it is. And the other thing that he says is two other things that rang true that you just said is, you know, he recalled getting up the next morning and sharing these kind of stories with other people that were there also doing the same thing too. And that it did. He said it makes you ill. He said it makes you, you know, you have terrible diarrhea and you're sick to your stomach. And he said that's the normal reaction. He said that's what it's supposed to be doing. And the way that he presented it when I first started listening to him talk about it is you really are, you're at a war with yourself, which I thought was an interesting kind of way for you to put it, because one of the last times that I did mushrooms, I was also looking for an answer, right? So you said people go into this and they seek an answer, right? Like the guys from Entourage are like, what's the next title of your movie going to be? Right? And mine was at the time, you know, this is years ago, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I had just come back from a job in Canada that hadn't worked out for me. And I was trying to figure out, do I want to freelance and kind of just write at home? I just started writing under Quote the Raven a lot. Or do I want to find a job where, you know, I can go out to an office? And I was struggling with it for a long time. I was applying for jobs and kind of taking interviews here and there. And I didn't really feel inspired one way or the other. But I was also kind of meandering around the house by myself when I got back to Philly. And I couldn't really figure out, you know, is this where I want to be? Is this where I want to spend most of my, can I spend the whole day here? Is it, you know, I had been doing it and it didn't really feel natural to me. So I was really struggling with it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go eat a bunch of mushrooms in the woods and see what happens. And so I walked my ass down to Wissahickon Park and I did. And I, you know, was pretty much at war with myself for the next, you know, 4-5 hours. And this was, you know, look, everybody has different trips on mushrooms. I've had times where I can't stop laughing for 6, 7, 8 hours straight. You know, my good buddy Gordon, we went into a McDonald's one day and he ordered the steak done medium rare, you know, and then that was it. That was 6 hours of laughing, you know, after that. And so, but there's also been times like this last time where you're at war and all of a sudden you're getting presented with, and ayahuasca much more potent than mushrooms, you're getting presented with a lot of things that you hadn't even thought about, and you're getting bludgeoned over the face with them too. It's not, hey, here's a greeting card, some things you might want to change, right?
Yeah man. And you know what you said, what the dude said on the podcast, like war with yourself, like that was day four for me, man. Like day four for me. After day three, like, I kind of reconnected with my, you know, I reconnected with my soul, my childhood. You know, I never had a relationship with my mom, bro. And I was always kind of beating myself up over the head for that, because, like, I never saw my father close with my mom. Like, I never saw him kind of, they were always yelling at each other, bro. They were always fucking yelling at each other for the dumbest little shit. And I just never had a relationship with her, bro. I forgot how to love the woman. And then the whole time I was sick on that bed, I was a 5-year-old again, like in my mom's arms and holding my mom's like hand and shit. And then I started to reconnect with the story of my mom. That's another thing I'ma just throw out there. This shit's crazy, bro. So I'm like my 5-year old self, and I'm tugging on, I'm like tugging on my shirt, basically like my older self, to tell me like a bedtime story, because I'm fucking sick, right? You're sick, you're on the mattress, and you fucking feel like shit, right? And I had already kind of reconnected with my mother's past, like how she grew up. And she was mad young. My mother was mad young when she got married to my father. They knew each other for a whole but 5 minutes. She was looking at pieces of paper with fucking pictures of the men that she had to choose from, because it was an arranged marriage. And, you know, that's how much she knew my father.
Where were your parents
before,
from?
From India.
Okay.
From Bombay. So, she barely even knew him before they got on a plane to come over here. And immediately she has my brother in the States. And then when they go back to India, they have me. And I'm getting flashbacks from all this shit, bro. Even though, like, they're kind of like images of the stories just kind of put together. And then I'm getting images of me in India when I was like freaking 5, 4, when I was like 11. You know, I'm getting images of all this kind of stuff. So I'm kind of like piecing shit together. I'm like, okay, what's up, mom? Like, what's going on with me and you? Like, that's what I was trying to figure out the whole time. And I just kind of reconnected with her in a way that just kind of fucking made me cry like a freaking baby, bro. Because I was just like, I never had this relationship with her. I never even thought about the shit she went through, you know, as a kid, coming to this country not knowing a fucking single person, and then just being in here and being with my father. And she grew up in a difficult environment as well. Like, her brother is literally 30 years older than she is. So she was kind of like the black sheep. She wasn't wanted. They were trying to marry her off as quickly as possible because they couldn't figure out what the fuck to do with her, right? So she wanted to run track, and her parents wouldn't make her run, you know, didn't want her to run track, because they were like, well, how the fuck are we going to get you married if you're out here running fucking track? She ran the 100-meter hurdle, I think, and the 100 and the 200 or something like that. And so my 5-year-old self, right? I'm sick as fuck. My 5-year-old self is tugging on my arm to tell him a fucking bedtime story. And I start to tell him this story of this beautiful, innocent little girl walking through a market in India, and all the shopkeepers know her. You know, they're just wowed by her innocence. They give her free shit. They know her parents, so she just kind of comes around to play with the animals that are in the market. And, you know, and remember, like, I'm tripping too at the same time, so I'm kind of like going in and out of this story. And then my 5-year-old self keeps tugging on my fucking arm to continue the fucking story. So I keep going, right? So all of a sudden, like, the innocence is lost. You know, now she's trying to run track. Her parents don't want her to. And now all of a sudden they want to marry her off. And here are a list of men that they want to marry her off to. And one of the men in the pictures was my fucking father. It was a picture from a place in fucking Jersey that I saw in maybe once in my life. I don't know where I saw this fucking picture, but it was a picture of my father from way back in the freaking, I think it was the 70s, maybe. It was black and white, and I saw a picture of my father, and then I realized I was telling my five-year-old self the story of my mom, bro, of my fucking mother. And that's when I broke the fuck down. I was like, oh my God, man. Meanwhile, I've been yelling at this woman. You know, I've been avoiding this woman. I haven't even tried to talk to her, you know, and I immediately was just like, yo, I've been a fucking horrible son. And, you know, the next day, of course, I call her immediately and was just like, what the fuck, mom? I'm sorry, you know? And now coming back home, after I come back home, like, I'm home with her now, doing shit with her, doing yoga with her, and, you know, just trying to get a relationship back with her. And, bro, it was just my natural tendency that whenever she asked me a question, it would just trigger me. Even if she's just asking me, like, right, where are you going, right, son? Where are you fucking going? Like, even just simple questions. Anything she asked me, it would just trigger me. I'd get defensive. I'd be like, mom, whatever, man. I'm leaving. You know what I mean? And that's how I would, that's my relationship with my mom for the last fucking 10, 12, I can't even tell you, since I went off to college, bro.
And what's crazy is build these kind of instinctive reactions into your neurochemistry, and they just happen immediately. You know, I have one friend of mine in specific where I have a tendency to get frustrated with him even when he asks simple questions, just like, hey, you know, how do you want to go do this next week? And I think about, why is that? You know, I think about, to be honest, I know that some of my reactions sometimes have helped shaped his demeanor in the way that he interacts with people too. So I know that he'll be, you know, more cautious to come out and say something because of the way that we've interacted for the last, this is like one of my best friends, you know, 15 years that I've known this guy. And it's one of those things where when you kind of get stuck in that prison of you think you've got a read on somebody, or you think automatically you know where they're coming from, or you think, you know, but the truth is there's a whole litany of factors that you haven't considered. And a lot of this
whole fucking world of shit that you haven't even thought about.
Yeah, man. Exactly. And you know? Everybody has a story, just like Sang Lucci has a story, just like Chris Irons has a story. And the broad range of emotions that you felt throughout your entire life, from the lowest low where you've been depressed to the highest high where you felt like you're on top of the world and everything in between, and all the shit that's happened to you from the time that you're born until right now being on this podcast, you know, all the best moments of your life, all the saddest moments of your life, everything, you know, it's all happened to somebody else, right? Somebody's been there, and not only that, man, but somebody has been 100 times happier than you have, 100 times more depressed as you have. They've had 100 times more. They've had 100 times less. They've had a million times more and a million times less. And there's people, you know, you tell yourself this sob story like, oh, well, you know, nobody really understands the shit that goes on in my brain. You know, there's so much. There's so much anxiety. It's so complex. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. You know there's people out there struggling 1,000 times more than you're struggling, that have 1,000 times more shit that they got to deal with mentally than you are. And so when you start to kind of tap into that, man, right, when you start to understand that that's the case, like, first off, if you go through therapy, right, or you start to get through anything that's going to kind of humble you, whatever it is in your life that's going to cause you to step back from that and kind of examine it just even the slightest bit, 1% more than you normally would, you know, that's some progress. But to have it really shown to you the way that psychedelics can do it sometimes, right, is a totally different thing. And then you start to consider these things like, wow, like, what kind of shit did my mom fucking go through? You know, what kind of shit did my dad go through? You know, I listen to Thich Nhat Hanh a lot, who's a Buddhist monk, right? Vietnamese Buddhist monk. He's got all these great lectures online, and he's constantly talking about your ancestors. He constantly says, you know, when you're breathing deep, thinking of your ancestors or feeling the love from your ancestors or going back to your, he's always linking things back to your ancestors, because what you are is a product of every way that they've ever felt, everything that they've ever done, every great decision, every horrible decision they've ever made. And then your entire lineage going back as far as you can shake the tree, right? So it's gotta be humbling to kind of look at. And honestly, Lucci, again, not to be long-winded, but there's people that go to therapy their whole lives just to tap into, you know, 1/1,000,000th of what you're talking about, right?
Yo, and after coming back, son, like, after coming back from doing the ayahuasca, I would just have interactions. And remember, like, one of the toughest parts, besides doing the ayahuasca and facing all your fears and stopping fighting, like, the biggest part of it was just not fighting it anymore. Like, we fight everything. I fight everything, tooth and nail, bro, because I feel like I have to be right or whatever, and maybe I do it worse than other folks, but, you know, there's so much we put up barriers to that we just don't want to accept, And maybe we do in the back of our minds somewhere or in our soul somewhere, but we can't physically do anything about it because we're just used to these mental processes, as you just stated, that we just subconsciously have been passed down, and we just don't even know we don't even know what we're doing. And bro, when I came back, the integration when you come back to the world, like, because you're on another plane, man. I was right. Vibrating on another frequency, man, the whole time I was down there, man. It was yoga, it was meditation, it was just breathing. Everything was just looking at my life from like a bird's eye view and being like, what the fuck are we even doing? What the fuck am I stressed out about all the time? Why the fuck am I doing this and this? And it was just taking, you know, it was just taking a subconscious like note of everything that was going on, all my processes, all the baggage that I had, all the fucking shit that I bring to every conversation without even fucking knowing it, just writing all this shit down and being like, who the fuck do you think you are? And what the fuck are we doing out here?
Right.
What the fuck is going on? And then when I came back home, bro, and I started to have regular conversations again, I would see how broke mentally people really are, bro.
Yep.
And I would look at them and I'd be like, fuck, man. Like, you are like, you need the ayahuasca too. You know, you want to set everybody free.
Lucci,
you know what I'm saying? You want to set everybody free.
How are you going to convince somebody that's walking around and basically their brain lives behind their eyes and they walk around with it all day, right? From the time they go get a fucking Egg McMuffin in the morning until the time that they have a couple of Budweisers at night and they go to bed and that's it. And they wake up the next morning and they do the next, you know, the same thing the next day. How do you shake that person loose to get them to think, well, by the way, you know, when you wake up this morning, I'd like you to know that you're a person, okay? We don't even know what a person is, let alone anything else, right? We don't even know what a human being is. You're a human being, all right? You live in Philadelphia, which is a state in which is a city inside of a state, Pennsylvania, right? Which is in what we call a country, which is the United States, which is in this thing called North America, which is on the northern hemisphere of a globe, right? Which, by the way, is like one of 15 billion globes that exists all over, right? We've got our solar system, we've got our galaxy, we got the Vega supercluster, whatever the fuck it's called. It's like, bro, how much can you zoom out, right? Like, how are you gonna shake the fucking random Burger King employee on the street and get him to be like, listen, man, like, who the fuck do you think you are? What the fuck do you think you're saying? You can't. I mean, a lot of people don't have the capacity to understand it, which is unfortunate. But like, there's no way to deliver that from therapy sessions without fucking going in and just hitting the ayahuasca and having it main fucking lined to your brain, right? You want one way to figure it out? Like, let's put you on fucking Jupiter to start, and then we'll fucking kick you out further into the universe from there, and then we'll see if you get it, right? Then we'll see if you understand it. But it's
one of the biggest realizations I had, Chris, man, was that it's not my fight. You know what I'm saying? That shit is not my fight. It ain't my fight. And all I can do, and bro, you know what else happened? As soon as I came home, like, I always had a very tumultuous relationship, even though it's very friendly, but it's also very stressful, like with my daughter's mother. Like, we would get in some big arguments, and she's the same personality as me. She's so defensive, and when you put us in a room together and we just want to win, it just becomes nasty, you know? We'll say shit to each other that we don't fucking mean, and we have to apologize for it later. You know, we'll just throw everything at each other. And once you start just acting differently, once I started just letting go of shit and just being different and just treating people different and talking to the same people differently, like, yo, my father came out and started asking me, like, yo, what the fuck, man? Like, how do I change this, and this? Like, I realized I'm doing the same thing, and I looked at him like, oh, you fucking think? Like, that's what I wanted to say. But, you know, instead I just smiled and I was just like, Pops, this is what we're both, this is our test, you know what I'm saying? This is what we're both going through. Like, let me know if you ever want to talk about it. And finally, like, I'm having great conversation with my father, great conversation with my mother, you know, great conversation with my daughter's mother, like, just great conversations with the people that I love, the people that you know, I care the most for. And they're all, you know, once you elevate that particular energy that you're on, you know, everybody comes over too, man. Everybody comes over too, you know, and it's not your job. It's not our job to sit there and force it on people. They're gonna do shit when they're ready.
Right.
And it would be even a disservice. It would be even a disservice for me to cut into somebody's life path.
Sure.
And try to save them from shit that needs to happen to them. So if chaos was meant for that person to realize how much they're fucking up, then who am I to step in front of that chaotic ball that's being hurled towards them? And they need that fucking lesson. There's so many people in my life that need that fucking lesson, bro. I can go on a whole nother fucking podcast about this shit. There was some ex-business partners of mine that are so fucking toxic, bro. I got into bed with these guys, I mean, you know, figuratively speaking, and
thanks,
you know,
for clearing that up.
Some really bad business deals, some really bad energy, some horrible fucking relationships. And, you know, I could have went down some horrible fucking paths. And I still have to deal with some of these guys, and it hurts me sometimes to just look at them and just being like, yo, what the fuck are you doing, man? You're ruining your kids' lives. You're ruining your fucking friends' lives. You're ruining your family's lives. So what are you doing? But that's just their path, bro. They have to go through
it,
man. You know,
a lot of it's about perspective, right? Whether or not you have the capability to understand,
true,
you know, the perspective that you're looking at things. And a lot of it is security. If you're an insecure person, it is a breeding ground. It is a fertile breeding ground for the type of bacteria that's going to just fuck your life up. Every bad decision grows wildly in the breeding ground of insecurity. If you're a person that has insecurities that you haven't dealt with, maybe you don't even know that you're insecure. Maybe you don't know why you're insecure yet, right? But that is the breeding ground on which a lot of bad decisions are made and a lot of negativity comes from. And that stuff just, it fucking festers, man. And like one of the things that you just talked about, you know, about kind of feeling not enlightened, but kind of, you know, one of my favorite, so there's great ways to get perspective using hallucinogens, right? But like this is one of the things that drew me to jujitsu too. And I just wrote a post about this on my Facebook the other day. Which is, and I don't know if you know anything about jiu-jitsu, but it's basically, it's like submission wrestling, submission grappling, and, you know, and when you train jiu-jitsu, you spar also. So a normal jiu-jitsu class at a jiu-jitsu gym is you spend about, you know, a half hour getting warmed up, and you spend 45 minutes going over a technique. Usually you drill the technique with a partner, and then usually for, you know, it all varies, and then usually there's about 45 minutes of live sparring where your intention is to, you know, choke the other person or get them into a submission where they have to tap. So either, you know, you got to get them into a place where they say, all right, that's enough. Either you're choking them out, or either you're, you know, you got them in a shoulder lock or whatever. And when you're sparring, you know, you're not trying to kill each other, but you are trying to assert yourself to the point where the other person knows that, you know, and the sparring in jiu-jitsu is very, because there's not a lot, you know, there's no striking. So you're not punching people in the face. You're not elbowing people. You're not kneeing people, at least on purpose. It's controlled, but people get after it too. So one of the feelings that I just got hooked on though was, you know, after that 45 minutes of sparring in the gym, I would walk out of the jiu-jitsu gym at 9:30 p.m. and the blood would still be rushing, right? Because maybe I had just, you know, prevented myself from getting strangled, or I had just gotten choked out a bunch of times, or, you know, maybe I just got my ass handed to me by, you know, a lower belt, or maybe, you know, I tried real hard to strangle somebody and it didn't work or whatever, but you're exerting yourself cardiovascularly to an extreme extent, and mentally it's a mind fuck too, because you're thinking this person is actually trying to choke me out. This person's trying to, you know, put me to sleep. This person's trying to get in a spot to break this arm. And so naturally, instinctively, it's a very, you know, it really wakes your fucking adrenaline up. It wakes your nervous system up. So when I leave the jiu-jitsu gym at 9:30, right, my fucking head is still pounding. I can hear the blood pumping in my head. It sounds like somebody is just hitting one of those fucking marching bass drums. Like boom, 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 boom. And like when I go and I sit in my car for those first, you know, 20 minutes and I start to kind of drive home from the gym, it's like the whole volume on the rest of the world has been turned down to mute. And And it's like you go completely. I always joke with my jiu-jitsu partners. I say, hey, never worry about, you know, what's in my email when I'm here, right? Like, there's far more pressing matters at hand. And it's that kind of feeling. You know, there's a few things that I found that can get you close to feeling kind of outside of the box of your normal everyday, and it's those little fucking instances. I live for that, man. I live for that because there's 30 minutes, there's an hour there, an hour and a half when I get done. Sometimes I come home and I just stand in the shower. Lucci, I'll come home and just stand in the shower for fucking 30 minutes, 45 minutes and just listen to nothing, you know?
Yep, the shower is where it's at for most people.
It's those moments that I search for. Because that's when you really start to get a little taste, a tiny, not an ayahuasca taste, but just this tiny kind of sober taste of perspective. And and some people get there with meditation too. I don't know. Had you ever meditated before you had gone down there?
So prior to going down there, I tried it a couple times. But again, like my brain and my thoughts would just consume me all the time. Like I was always consumed. I was a person who was totally consumed with my thoughts. You know, for I couldn't even sleep at night, bro. I always had problems sleeping because of my thoughts, because of my worry, my anxiety, because I wasn't in a good place, or maybe I was trying to get to the next place. I was always thinking about trades too. Like trading is a fucking mentally disgusting, and it's there's a hodgepodge of shit that you have to deal with when you're a trader. And most traders, they don't even want to talk about any of this stuff, let alone deal with any of this stuff, let alone realize it's those same thoughts that are fucking up like their trajectory. Their whole career as a trader is getting fucked up because of their own fucking thoughts. Like every single trader, 90% of them can't make it because of that one simple I mean, it sounds simple, but it's the most complicated thing in the world. But that one thing, that's why most of these traders fail. But I never really did it before I went here. And the second you walk into this place, you know, and again, it's a spiritual place anyway. It's just quiet. There's the right music, the right, you know, setting for all this kind of stuff. I don't have my phone on me. You know, I got no positions on. And I'm like, I'm going for a specific intent. I'm going to relieve myself of all of my thoughts and all of my burdens. And one of those huge things being the fucking phone, man, and the fucking computer and the fucking stock market all the time. Where is fucking BYND? Where's Chipotle? Where's Amazon after earnings? Where's my fucking Netflix?
Like, and then when the equity market closes, it's where the futures open up? What's going on overnight?
Where's the futures? 1 o'clock opens, China wakes up. Where's the crypto? What's going on with Bitcoin? It never fucking stops. And all of a sudden, like, I'm there. I'm doing it, and bro, I was I'm able to meditate now for up to an hour, and I could easily go longer. And when I do yoga for like an hour, there's also meditation like wrapped in and around yoga.
Sure.
And it's fucking amazing, bro. It really is amazing. It reconnects me with, you know, that the right mental space. But I'm finding the largest issue, Chris, is what the fuck do you do when you're just the world is just going to pull you back every time. It's like we were meant to suffer in this world, and the people that we have to talk to, the business that you and I have to do on a daily basis, the phone calls we have to make, the fires that have to be put out, you know, all of this shit happens. And I look at it and I'm like, yeah, okay, I know it really doesn't matter. And I know, like, whatever, you know, this fire is going to be put out and everything's going to be fine. But the day-to-day shit, bro, it's just fucking, some of it, it's just fucking stupid now. Chris, I look at it and I'm just like, why the fuck do I even care about half of this shit? So now I'm starting to scrape out stuff that doesn't make sense for me anymore. I'm starting to create roles even in my businesses where people can take over some of the, you know, some of the stuff that I don't need to be stressing out about. And I'm just trying to create processes now so my mind can exist in the place that I want it to, at least a majority of the fucking time. And it's like, how do I create the right mental hacks, the right body hacks, the right computer hacks to build a world where I can exist in a mental space where I'd like to be in versus the wake up in the morning, your phone's right next to you, you're looking at your fucking emails, you don't want to wake up, you fucking finally wake up, you got to drive to work, you're sitting in fucking traffic, then all of a sudden you get to work, somebody's calling you for this, somebody's calling you for that, I need it now. All that shit is for the birds, son. That shit is for the fucking birds, bro. I can't do it anymore.
Well, some of the hacks that you talked about, right? Because I went through a lot of this too years ago. I was trying to kind of figure out. So, like, I never knew that you could. First off, you lose sight of what's going on when you're doing the everyday day to day like you're talking about. I didn't even know that you could live in a state of calm because I didn't know what calm was. I didn't know either, bro.
You and me both.
I was never breathing in a calm way. Right, I was always breathing from my upper chest. I wasn't breathing from my diaphragm. You know, when you push your belly out when you were breathing, right? So I was just down to that on a daily basis. I was in fight or flight mode basically every day, all day, until, you know, years ago. I started going to therapy once in a while. I started looking into meditation. And I gotta tell you, man, what a profound difference it makes. Yeah, the problem is. So first and foremost, I'll tell you a couple of things, right? The first problem is you can't get people to sit down to try to take that first deep breath to begin with. I can't tell you.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many times I meditated that, you know, I get 5-6 deep breaths in, and everybody meditates differently, right? So I have a way that I think works for me. I get 5-6 deep breaths in and I feel like a completely different person than I did, you know, 20 or 30 seconds ago. Now, I'm not saying when you sit down to meditate, oh, you're going to feel totally different right away. Because a lot of people, for me included, I mean, it took years for me to learn how to meditate and to learn why it's okay not to be able to meditate. And, you know, meditation is one of these things. Dan Harris, I think, said once, it's like you're walking around with a closed fist and you're just telling yourself all the time, I got to open my fist. And the more you tell yourself, the more you can't do it, that you just have to, to surrender to your fist being closed before it'll open, right? And there's a lot of that when it comes to meditation. There's a lot of that when it comes to trying to get your mindset out of exactly what you're talking about, the day-to-day, you know, where's the phone? Where's the computer? Where's the markets? And look, I know we've talked about stuff like this before, but some of the changes that I made off the bat that I'd be interested to know if you had tried these, and I would challenge my listeners to try them because they made a profound difference in my life. The first thing is I keep my phone on Do Not Disturb all the time, all day, every day, right? Which means that it seems like a stupid thing. And if you have kids, you put them on emergency breakthrough or whatever. But other than that, because I have mobile alerts, Twitter, I have every app you can think of on my phone, that right there eliminates the phone beckoning for me to look at. And it means that I'm going to look at it when it's time for me to go over and look at it. Very small thing, but makes a huge difference when it compounds over the course of the long term. The other big difference I made is I've made a habit of not bringing my phone in with me. And what I mean by that is when I go out, a lot of times if I go get a haircut, there's no need for me to bring my phone in with me. It stays in my car. When I go to jiu-jitsu, my phone stays in the car. Sometimes I don't even bring my fucking phone at all. There's no need for it.
Right.
You know, I don't need to be, because there you're getting 5, 10, 15 second pockets where you could check it. And you don't need to be checking your phone in that time. It doesn't give you enough time to respond. Doesn't give you enough time to think about it. All it's going to do is fuck you up and get you worrying about something that you weren't worried about when you walked in. There's no need to. So I started getting in the habit of leaving the phone. Leave it in the car. Leave it at home when you go get your coffee. Do you need it for a fucking 3-second trip to Wawa? The answer is no, you do not. Right? So that was the other thing too. There was something else that I wanted to say about meditation. I can't remember. I lost my thread. But anyways.
Yeah, you had a couple things that you were challenging the listeners if they did. So the first one was the, you know, just turning your phone off or not keeping it with you.
Keep it on Do Not Disturb.
Put it on Do Not Disturb, and then you were going to hit the second one. Did that help at all?
Kind of. I'll remember it in a second. But, you know.
So what I did was I killed my data plan. I killed my data plan completely. So I only use the phone when I have Wi-Fi, when I get access to Wi-Fi. Now, the problem with that...
Fucking
is
Wi-Fi
that
is everywhere.
Wi-Fi everywhere.
Right, that's not a good fix. That's not a good fix, Lucci. Oh, I remember what I wanted to say. So what? Other thing I wanted to respond to was when you said that, you know, look, you went down there and you were doing yoga every day and the place was kind of set up, you know, right mood, right everything. You can create that environment at your house.
Yes.
You know what
That's
I mean?
What I've done.
Like, I have candles all throughout my house. Okay, I light them all the time. I even have those little LED ones. They come on a timer at night. So when the sun goes down, you know, I have these little flickering lights. When I wake up in the morning, I have a couple of YouTube spa music playlists I put on. So I'll get up early, right? 5:30. Yep. What do I want to do? Do I want to get up and fucking, you know, mainline all the information into my phone, into my brain? No, fuck no. That's not what I want to do.
Fucking snort a line. Snort a line on Instagram.
5:30, I'm dead asleep. 5:31, I'm running a 4-second 40, right? But no, man, I get up. Put on this. I have a spa music or I'll put on down tempo. And sometimes I'll just listen to the silence, man. I'll throw on my bathrobe and just park it, you know? Like... You could create that environment at home. There's ways, you know, people go to the spa all the time and they're like, oh, it was the most relaxing thing in history. And then they come home, you know, and then they're just getting shit stuck down their throat and up their ass again. And they don't realize you can create this environment at home. Like I go and get acupuncture and massages pretty regularly, right? I would recommend that to everybody. Everybody, you got people out there paying fucking $1,200 a month in health insurance. I got news for you. Put aside $500 a month to just go get massaged and get acupuncture and see if you don't notice a profound difference in whatever it is that you're having an issue with. Because that time, and I don't even think acupuncture works because of the needles. I think it works because you're forced to sit still in a room and basically meditate for an hour.
Right.
You know, change your diet, okay? Eat a raw food diet and just see if shit doesn't start correcting itself before you crack open something printed with Pfizer on the side of it.
So I think what we should challenge actually the listeners to do, and I think what both you and I have started to do, and you more so than me, is like spend as much money as you do on technology, on trading strategies, on perfecting your trading strategies. Like, spend as much time as you do on that shit on your mental health, on your actual mental health. Like, 100%. Spend as much, you know, even spend a fucking quarter of the time that you do stressing about the fucking markets. And I guarantee, actually, I'm gonna do this right now. I fucking guarantee your P&L. If you spend a fucking quarter of the time that you do thinking about fucking trading and thinking about strategies and thinking about your business and thinking about all that stuff, I guarantee your fucking performance in your business, in your fucking life and all that shit will go through the motherfucking roof, man. It really will, man. Well, it really fucking will.
There's a huge difference between coming in and looking at a chart of SPOOS, right? Or looking at, you know, the S&P futures in the morning. And being amped up, hopped up, already fucking out of your mind with your, you know, and looking at it while you're in this fight or flight mode than there is of coming in. And trust me, I've done it. I've stood in front of the same screen, okay, watching the same stock make the same move, and I've watched it in a calm state of mind where, you know, I'm breathing deeply and I'm puffing out my stomach and I'm listening to, you know, the smooth sounds of Orbital or whatever ambient music I'm listening to. And I've done it while I've had fucking Slayer on in the background, you know, while I've been raging drinking Stella Artois at 11 o'clock in the morning. And I got to tell you, man, the way that you're going to react is two completely different ways. And I have completely, my friend Manny will attest to this, changed the way that I look at trading and changed the way that I looked at managing my portfolio from some of these breakthroughs that I've had a couple of years ago, because it used to be, you know, FOMO times 1,000 all the time with every ticker on every tick. And now it's just like, fuck it, man. A lot of times I see the P&L going the wrong way. I say, I'm going to go for a run, man. I'll take an hour and a half. Yep. I'll look at this in the morning, you know? And assuming that you're not completely in a spot where you can get, you know, destroyed. If you manage your risk. Right, exactly. If you manage your risk to some degree, that's it. And I can't tell you, Lucci, in the last year and a half, I can't tell you how many times it's happened where I've woken up in the morning and the P&L is down and... you know, the thought process used to be, I got to fix this, right? Time to fix it. And I just say, just fucking leave it and we'll see where the wind takes us. And you come back 3 hours later or 6 hours later or a day later and, you know, the P&L's green. And you're like, fuck.
And you're good.
Right, because it felt like the world was going to end there for a second, Lucci.
You know what? And that's how we fuck up, like, even relationships. Like, bro, like, I think you made a comment about... I think you made a comment at one point about how difficult it is just to get somebody to understand, to open up, to see themselves from the outside. Like, I was in love with a girl that fucking was the worst person for me, like, mentally speaking. And she was in a horrible place. She was just fighting. She was fighting everything, and she was defending everything to the last fucking degree. And she was just I wasted so much time, and just like that scenario, the same thing happens in trading, and the same thing happens with whatever else it is that you're attacking with the wrong energy. You're just going to make it worse. Like, even if you're in an argument with your girl, or you're in an argument with your spouse, and it just gets heated, shit's just going to naturally get worse. That's the path of least resistance. The path of least resistance is shit just getting worse. And you saying stuff to each other that you don't mean, that you can't take back. And once you say those things to each other, that, you know, that's it. The relationship has changed. Now, all of a sudden, you wake up next day, there's all that horrible fucking energy.
Right.
Maybe it goes on for a week. Maybe it goes on for a fucking month. Now, you know, you have to fix things. You try to go on vacation to save things. That doesn't fucking help.
Right.
You throw money at the situation, and the same thing happens to trading. When you are facing that fucking loss, you attack it with that fight or flight shit, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. Maybe you might try to hedge around it. You might try to flip sides. You might end up over trading, and all of a sudden, a $20,000 loss becomes a fucking $100,000 loss, and so on and so forth. And bro, that's what was the destroyer of any progress that I made in my fucking life, bro. And now, like, I've been on a streak that I can't even explain it to you, Chris. I can't even explain it to you because it doesn't even feel real to me, because I don't care. I don't care.
Right.
I don't care anymore about where this shit goes. I don't give a fuck.
And don't you find it interesting, just not only with trading, Lucci, but just like in life in general, when you do drop the ego and you do kind of, like you're saying, you don't give a fuck anymore really about the P&L. I mean, to some degree, you don't want to burn it all in one day, right? But like... When you stop yourself from thinking about it, it's like with the ego. When you drop the ego and somebody says, you know, hey, fuck you, motherfucker, and you just say, okay, you know, all right, bye, have a nice day or something. People are mystified by the fact that you can just, you know, what do you mean? Didn't my insult cause you great intellectual, harm to the degree where you feel like you have to defend yourself? It's like, who... You know, it's like, dude, you got nothing to fucking prove, right?
Bro, it's the easiest but hardest to get to epiphany in life.
Right.
Because so long you've been spending doing the same things, expecting the same reaction, and expecting it to go to those places. So somebody pops out at you and it's like, oh, fuck you, you pop right back, and then it becomes a fucking match, and then who knows where these things go. And the second you decide to react to it differently, bro, it's like the whole world changes, bro. And it's in those moments that you truly find out, like, you know, what's going on, man. And you truly take a moment to register and resonate with the fact that you don't have to go to those places. You don't have to. And, yo, driving is a perfect place to see this in real
perfect
time.
Perfect example. Like, my mom always uses this as an example. Always. Yeah, she always says, you never know who's got the gun in their car.
Yeah, exactly. If you're on the highway, like, you can just see the emotions in every fucking car that you drive past, or you see their reaction to something that happens on the road. You know, some guy honks over here, some guy's trying to cut somebody off, some guy's trying to not allow somebody else into their lane because they've been sitting in this lane, da-da-da-da-da, all this kind of shit. All those decisions, those subconscious decisions that people make when they're fucking driving, that's exactly what it is in real time. But it's like being able to just say, oh, okay, I see you getting a little angry right here. I'm just going to back off here and let you just do you, you know? And it just, bro, it feels amazing, man. And to relate it back to the market, it's just like, it's beautiful, man, because, bro, I can come in any month, find something to trade, and make some money.
Right.
It doesn't mean anything if I'm, oh my God, God forbid I missed a 400-point down day or a 500-point up day, or I missed these weekly calls jumped by fucking 1,000%. Jesus called out some shit and some other people made money. Some other people made crazy money. And I'd just look at it before and I'd have that envy bug. I'd have that ego bug.
Right.
I'd be like, oh, why wasn't that me? Why wasn't that me? Oh shit. You know, I can't ever let this happen to me again. I gotta be better. That way, any move that happens, I'm a part of it. Fuck all y'all. I gotta be a part of this shit. And the shit that you do just to make yourself that person is the fucking worst thing that you could do for yourself. But you don't realize that until you've done enough damage, man. Until you've done enough physical fucking account damage, mental damage, and you just kind of get to this place where you're just like, first of all, it's mission impossible anyway,
right,
to catch everything in the fucking stock market. It's mission impossible anyway. Like, what kind of ego do you have to believe that you're catching everything out here, bro? Like,
and converse to that, and the really fucking freaky thing is that, listen, you know, there's 20,000 listed equities that trade every single day. All right, so when you wake up tomorrow, somebody's going to report earnings. There's going to be some information arbitrage somewhere. Some stock's going to be up 50%. Some stock's going to be down 50%. Yep. There's going to be options out there that you could have made 100-bagger or 1,000-bagger on every single day. Every day.
Yep.
And if for some reason you can't do it in equities, there's bonds, there's derivatives, there's Forex. So what people don't realize is, hey, you know, as long as the world exists the way that we know it today, and the global economy exists the way that we know it today, and it continues to evolve,
exactly,
right? This isn't the fucking 70s. We don't have to get up every morning and check the newspaper for our stock quote. You can pretty much wake up any second of any day, and whether you're trading cryptos or you're trading futures or you're waiting for the Nikkei to open, there's gonna be an opportunity for you to fucking bank coin. So knowing that constant stream of pitches is coming down the pipe, man, like a fucking, like your local batting cages with a ball hopper that just goes all the way up to heaven, man, and it just keeps spitting pitches. Thump, 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 thump. You don't even have to swing. You don't even have to stand in the cage. You know what I mean? You could go out and just meditate for a little while or have a beer. The shit's going to fucking be there when you get back. Trust me. I've never gotten down to Atlantic City and been like, holy shit, the craps tables are missing. Man, I really should have gotten that gamble in while I had the chance. The shit's always going to be there, right?
No, and this is a great segue to something that I definitely want to talk about. But let me just hit on this. I mean, like, you're talking about FOMO right here. I mean, even when you're out with your friends, or I remember when I was younger and my friends used to post pictures or you know, whatever, they were at this place or that place, you know, and that's what Instagram is. You know, you go on Instagram and all of a sudden you just have this rush of fucking envy,
right,
of every single industry, of things that you don't even have any business in, but all of a sudden you start wanting these things, or you want somebody's life, or you want this girl that you just fell in love with because you saw a picture of her in fucking 5 seconds, and so on and fucking so forth, bro. It's crazy how much time we waste, how much fucking decisions, how much bad decisions we make based off of that fucking FOMO.
Right,
but this is a great segue. This is an amazing fucking segue to purpose, man. So if we know, like, with trading, the shit's always there, right? We can always accomplish what we want to accomplish. That's one of the big things that I took away. You know, I used to be hell-bent on the number, right? And every trader is hell-bent on a number, right? I met a trader the other day. He was hell-bent on $100 million. Like, he was up, I don't know. I think he was up like 10 or 11 or something like that so far this year, but he couldn't shut up about being up, I think it was like 80 million or 90 million. And for some reason, he had that random number. People have random numbers. Like I met a.
Do
I
know that guy, by the way?
No, I don't. What, I don't think you know.
Was
that
he
guy.
At the?
Maybe
was he
you
at
do.
The, was he at the June 20th conference?
No. Okay. But however, you know, he's another one that, of course, brags about, wanting the 100 million. And you know, and again, everybody has their own purpose, and I'm sure he can hit it. But again, it's like, what does that cause us? I met another girl who was at a trader meetup that I did in Chicago, and her number was 28 million. There was another kid there whose number was 500,000. There was another kid there whose number was, 12 million. And my number was always like 10, and my number was like 10 million. But, but it's like these numbers that we create, these goals that we create for ourselves, we don't even know what the root of them are.
Right.
And we don't even go back to look at them and be like, what do I even need this shit for, bro? And the money that I've made recently and I've been able to keep, bro, like, I used to be upset with it. You know what I'm saying? I used to be upset with it, years ago when I was in New York, and I'd be like, yo, that's not enough. And I'd jeopardize all of it. I would jeopardize all of it for the attachment to the other thing, the attachment to what I believed and what my ego told me my purpose was, and that alone I see everywhere, not only in trading, but across the board. It's going back to like, why are we doing this? What are you actually fucking doing out here? And the ayahuasca was just like a slap in the face. It was just like, okay, what are we even doing here? Like, what the fuck does all this money even mean? Even if you did make the 5 mil, even if I had the 10 mil, what does it fucking mean? What does it mean? What does it define as me as a person? And even when I get there, what is it going to do for me?
Right.
And if I have no idea and no reason for having it in the first fucking place, what do you think is going to happen to it? So many people lose it because they have no idea why they had it in the first place, and now they're just using it to impress everybody else. It's just, what are we fucking doing this shit for? So I want to ask you, man, like, you have a big purpose as far as this particular podcast and the content that you've been putting out there, and you put in a lot of freaking work for this shit.
I do.
And it's paid, it's paid off. I mean, look at the views you're getting, the listens you're getting here on the podcast. It's growing every single freaking week. And I want to know from you, like, what's the ultimate thing for you? What's the thing that drives you every single day? What's the thing that you can kind of reconnect yourself to? And just to know that you're not out here doing dumb shit.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I was actually, I was talking, I know I talked to Carson on Saturday for the podcast. Then I talked to him, I think, Monday or Tuesday of this week, and one of the topics, off the air, obviously, but one of the topics we were talking about was the podcast and kind of, what my goals are and why I'm doing it. And it's always something I never felt like I wanted to get into. I felt like I would be like boring people kind of with that. I actually just did a podcast episode called Why the Fuck Do I Do This? Because after YouTube took down one of my podcasts, a bunch of people have been emailing me and asking me, and for me, I like knowing that there's a lot of runway ahead of me in terms of the podcast, right? There's,
right.
I'm doing good, but, there's a lot more people that could be listening if they'd like to, and people are welcome to, and if they don't want to, that's fine too. I approach the podcast with the same kind of ease and the same kind of attitude that I approach, like relationships or now the market, which is, you can take it if you'd like it, and if you don't like it, you don't have to take it. Somebody the other day was complaining about the episode I did with Richard Gage about 9/11. Is this what you want to turn your podcast into? And I said, hey, man, you know what? I'm going to turn it into whatever I want to turn it into. And if you want to listen, you're more than welcome. And if you don't, you're more than welcome to not. That's the cool thing about podcasts. You put them out there. You listen to the ones that you like. You don't listen to the ones that you don't like. And nobody's forcing you to do anything. Nobody forces anybody to go onto my Patreon and donate to me to keep the podcast going, right? People just do it because they enjoy the content. And so along those lines, why do I book the guests that I book? Why do I talk to the people that I talk to? What's the goal? The goal from the beginning with the podcast, Lucci, was two things. One was to kind of have an outlet for my fucking brain farts, which I kind of find cathartic, to be honest. I find it almost therapeutic to be able to come on and just take what it is that I want to say without having to write it down or whatever and just blast it out there into the internet. Because every once in a while you get somebody that agrees with you, and that's cool. Often, too, when you believe that you're in the minority. I want to get on the record a lot of things that I feel and a lot of things that I wanted to say about not just finance, but life in general. So this is a cool way to do that, too. I mean, maybe that's a little bit of a selfish kind of egotistical thing to think, but
right.
It kind of fulfills that. And also, too, I pick my guests by the people that I find interesting. You know, it's like when I talk at the beginning of an episode and I'm saying, you know, Sangluchi supports the podcast and I've known him for 6-7 years. I mean, that's not fucking bullshit. Like, you know,
right,
I talk to
right.
the people that I like to talk to, right? I invite Richard Gage on because I spent years watching Richard Gage's videos on 9/11 and I find him to be curious. I invite Carson Block on because I know him and I know he's a person of integrity and I respect him and admire him as an investor. And I feel similarly situated about everybody that I talk to. So believe it or not, the goal of the podcast isn't to go out and bring in, you know, a million views a podcast and turn it into a multi-million dollar thing. If that happens, am I going to be stoked? Fuck yeah, I'm going to be stoked. Like, I would love that. But that's not the goal. You know, the goal is, like, I have a thing on my Patreon page, and it's a quote from Joe Rogan when he's discussing his podcast with a guest, and he says, you don't have to be number one, you just have to be something for somebody. And I just always, I always like that quote. And so when I think about what my mission is, what inspired me, right, Lucci? When I got into finance and I started looking at it and I started figuring out the game, and this is literally, we're talking 10 years ago, it wasn't that long ago, that I started to go from a guy that thought, hey, stocks should only go up and, you know, a higher number on a stock is better and that's it, to discovering equity valuation, to discovering, you know, the financial news networks and then taking it deeper. Why do they say the things that they do? What does a sell side analyst really mean? What's their intention when they're giving you analysis? To, you know, working investor relations somewhere where I was sitting with a securities attorney going over every single word that would be in an annual report and saying, whoa, there's a lot of shit in here that everybody is missing. To being the skeptic that I am now and understanding the system the way I do now and believing that it's mostly a bunch of bullshit and a scam to fucking fuck people like, you know, my parents and your parents out of their money when they've got it all invested in 2008 happens, and because they don't know, they don't understand. They think, you know, they were directed by somebody at Edward Jones to buy index funds or whatever it is, you know? So my goal is kind of to pull that curtain back, and I've been using that expression for years. Pull the curtain back on the industry and let the fucking everyday person understand that, hey, you know, this system here is being run by humans, and humans are greedy, and humans are not perfect, which means that the system is greedy, and the system is imperfect. And so when you see people that are bright-eyed and bushy-tails, like, you know, Ross Gerber, who's out there just, just buy Netflix at any price, it's like you start thinking to yourself, like, you don't even know what kind of a system you're a part of, man. You know, like, you don't even see the bigger picture. And this, again, is a question of perspective, right? The Keynesians tell me I'm wrong all the time, that, you know, I just don't get it. You know, the problem is, Chris, you just don't get it. You didn't go to Yale. You didn't take fucking econ courses. You just don't get it. I get it. The problem, motherfuckers, is that you're not looking at monetary policy over the course of 100 or 200 years. You're looking at it over what's happening today, what's happening this week, how the market will react to a 25 basis point cut today. Right. So when I talk Austrian school and I start asking questions and criticizing the Fed or criticizing the financial media, what's the goal, Lucci? The goal is to get people to understand that there's another side to that argument. Right. There's another perspective that the Yahoo Finance front page and the Wall Street Journal front page and fucking Melissa Lee on CNBC and Jerome Powell at the podium are giving you. There's a whole other game behind the scenes. There's an entire other theory that people don't even talk about. And if the other theory that people aren't talking about turns out to be right, it means that everything that's happening now is just preparing us to get fucked that much harder in the future. So that is why I give presentations like short the whole fucking thing, you know, like I gave at Whitney's thing in May. So what's my goal? My goal is not to fucking be a bajillionaire. It would be great. It would be cool. You know, I wouldn't change much aside from what I'm doing now. I would drink the same beer. I would sleep in the same bed. I would drive the same car. But my bigger goal is, because I can't force mushrooms down people's mouths, open your mind up, right? Think about the shit a little bit differently, right? Maybe Goldman Sachs doesn't have your fucking best interest in mind, Lucci, you know?
Yep. Bro, I think we just heard from you, and I'm sure you've answered this question before, but like, we just heard your passion. All your passion just literally came right out in that diatribe that you just went on. Like, and that's who you are, bro. That's who you are. That's what you're doing. And you do it for the love of that. Everybody sees it. Everybody enjoys it. There's not that many other voices that are out there. And it's like, you need to be that voice there. So you are that voice there. And you know, there needed to be that voice. And you decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to be that guy, you know, and you're having fun being that guy, you know, and that's kind of where I would love for people to get to. But again, just like we can't shove mushrooms down these motherfuckers' mouths. So, that's what it is. So, yo, I opened up a free community basically for the traders that, you know, I run into at these meetups and that are in my world. And all we talk about, bro, is this shit. Because I hate talking about fucking trading anymore. I hate talking about trading now. I hate it. I don't want to say I fucking like it triggers me or whatever, but I just don't want to talk about it anymore because I feel like I used to think the market was 100% of me, bro. You know what I'm saying? And there's so many traders that know exactly what I'm talking about. They eat shit, sleep, and think the market. That's it. So they can't even have productive relationships with their kids, their families, with any of their friends, because God forbid they're taking a loss or something like that. It's written on their fucking sleeve, man. You know what I mean? They'll say, their friends will ask them like, yo, you know, do you want to go out tonight? They'll be like, nah, I'm staying in. They don't take care of themselves. You know, they're at home fucking eating shitty. And all of a sudden, you know, life has changed for the worse. And then God forbid they're on the fucking hot streak. What are they doing, right? And so then you see the other side of that energy as well. And I just don't want to talk about the trading anymore because it's 5%. I realize it's 5%. It's 10% of who I want to be. I don't want to be a person anymore that's defined by my fucking ups and downs, man. That shit is stupid. You know, there's so much more to me. There's so much more to everybody else who is a trader. And I'm speaking to your audience, my audience as well, and all the listeners here. Like, you guys aren't the ticks on the screen. You guys aren't defined by the tickers that you trade. You're not defined by how cool you are in these chat rooms that you exist in. Like, the real life that is happening around you, like, that's what defines you, man. Who you are to the people that you love, the your family, that's who you really fucking are. So you know, if you've lost your way, you know, like I did as well, that's kind of what you're looking for, man. And that's the only place where you can go where you'd sound as passionate as Chris does when he's talking about, you know, the content that he's putting out there. That's the only time that you're going to sound as passionate as I am with, you know, some of the other projects that I got going on, you know? So I would totally stress that to all the listeners here. And that's one thing that I'm trying to do with this Slack group as well. Like, I realize, like, I'm okay being the psychological sort of shepherd or the mental shepherd for a lot of the traders in my community, because Chris, man, these people are fucked up, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, these people are really fucked up, and they're fucking up a lot of lives around them, and they don't even know it, bro.
Well, and the thing is, go ahead.
No. That's it. I was just gonna say
that the thing is too. It can be difficult because when you first discover trading and you discover, you know, you go through all these stages, right? The first stage is, you know, hey, I'm, and I see people in my life through these various stages. I have guys that I know don't know shit about the market sending me, you know, they're trying to start a newsletter or they're, you know, and they got 40 followers or, you know, they're doing technical analysis or whatever. And then, you know, there's guys that are really heavily engrossed in it that I know that are billion-dollar hedge fund managers that eat, sleep, and breathe it. But, you know, when you start out and you first start trading or you first, you know, kind of surrender that part of your identity, however much it's going to be, is going to be Wall Street and is going to be a trader, you go through cycles just like in life, and you go through stages where, you know, for some people, like you said, it's their entire identity. You know, people go through stages where that's how they identify before they don't have shit. You know, you got your fake it until you make it crowd, right? You got your crowd that fucking you know, is looking for, they want to, what am I trying to say? You know, you have your crowd that really wants to go out and they want to strike it rich, right? And yep. And maybe, you know, faking it till they make it is not a big deal. I think everybody has holes in their identity, right? And it's a product of your upbringing and a product of just normal human nature. And a lot of people try to fill those holes with being a trader and with Wall Street too. I think the best point that you just made was that it should really only be, you know, a couple percent of who you are. And who you are outside of trading is really who you are. It's not about making the big trade, because people crush it and people get crushed every single day, man. Somebody made $100 million today. Somebody lost $100 million today. And between them and your fucking broke ass, there's a billion different stories that a billion different people can tell you. So what are you going to do? You're going to try and kind of, you know, make that your whole identity and make that who you are? Or are you going to try and have... I'll never forget, man. I worked at McGillin's in Philadelphia. I was talking about sports gambling to this old guy. And I asked him if he had money on a football game. And I was betting on sports a lot at the time. And he said, no, I don't. Okay. You know, he said, do you? I said, yeah, you know, I've got so-and-so, whatever. I said, but I'm really trying to cut back. And he just said to me, listen, he's like, you'll find out there's more to life than betting the games. And
there you go.
It always just stayed with me. And I apply that to the stock market, right? You'll find out there's more to life than betting the games. But everybody's at a different stage in their journey, right? You remember how excited you felt when you first discovered trading? When you first thought you knew some shit?
Bro, I can't even explain to you, man. I was all about, like, outworking. I remember walking into the prop office just to get an interview. And there was literally like 40 white dudes, young white dudes, like 25, 26. They were wearing t-shirts and fucking flip-flops, just sitting in front of two screens, just sitting in front of the computers. And one kid made, one dude in there made $15,000. And he bought everybody pizza. And I remember from that moment on, bro, I was just entranced, bro. I was just like, I walked in there the next day. I was like, yo, where do I sign? Let's go. Let's do this. And I walked in there the next day, and I worked literally 12, 13 hours a day, 14 hours a day, just reading tape, just because I was just like, I got to get this. Bro, I had so much energy just to figure it out. And then it took me even longer. Like, it took me way longer to figure out myself. It took me years to figure out the real game was understanding myself. That's where the money was. And I figured that out maybe year two. But then now, come year 12, I'm still working on the same motherfucking game of working on yourself. And that kind of shows you, like, how much it has to become a process of every single human being. Like, we all have to wake up every day, and instead of fucking fight or flight, like, allow the world to push us in these stupid directions, allow our thoughts to push us in these stupid directions, we all have to just work on ourselves every single fucking day. And then all the things that we want and all the things that we're after, all the beautiful things we want to put out in the world, like, all that shit will happen. All that shit will just happen naturally. But, bro, I had so much fucking energy, man, when I found trading, bro. I can't even... you know, I wanted to trade it all. I wanted to understand everything. I read every book, Chris. I read every motherfucking book I could get my hands on, and they didn't help me for shit either, you know?
And a lot of times, the harder you try, the worse you make it on yourself. You know what I mean? If you go in there with walk into a fucking prop shop, and for people that haven't been to a prop shop, it's like a proprietary trading shop where basically they're going to give you a bankroll, and they're going to let you trade the bankroll. If you make money that day, they're going to give you a cut of it. That's your entire paycheck, and they got risk management motherfuckers just basically walking around. So if you dump 2% in a day, that's it. You pack your shit up, you go home, you start over tomorrow. If you've ever been in a prop shop, a lot of them are just, you don't even know what equity or what future the person's trading. You just see the numbers kind of flashing on the screen. You see the bids and the offers coming in. Yep. And you just see a motherfucker sitting there like a zombie. Just click, 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 click. Just, it's like playing a video game, man. It's like playing Atari. You know, you're just there trying to click the right thing at the right time. They don't even, you know, it's not like they're sitting in there putting in orders. Everything's automated a lot of times. So they're literally just trying to almost play a video game. And if you go in there with this super intense attitude, like you got to outwork everybody, it's like when you're on drugs, man. One of my buddies says, just ride the wave. Don't let the wave ride you. If you go into your fucking mushroom trip or your ayahuasca trip going, man, I'm going to be all over this. I'm going to be on top of it, you know, whatever. Those are the times you're going to get your fucking ass handed to you. And it's the same thing with going into a prop shop with that attitude.
Exactly, bro. Exactly. So, man. I don't even know what we're talking about right now, but I love this conversation. I love where it's going, and I love that it's going to be out there for everybody to freaking listen to. More of this shit needs to be out there. And Chris, that's kind of one of my newfound purposes as well after leaving, you know, ayahuasca. This is a community that is hurt, bro. This community is fucking hurt, and I have to see these people every day. I have to talk to these people every day, bro, in my chat room. I talk to them every fucking day, and I listen to them every day, and I can tell now just by the words they use, by how they're speaking in the chat room, that they're fucking pissed off, or they're angry about something, or they're bringing some kind of loss back into the markets. And these are hurt people, bro. They need help.
Man, you know what? A lot of it comes from, you say you don't know where we are in this conversation, but I think a lot of it comes from some of the nice things that we've found that we want to kind of show to other people too. You know, remember that Sublime song where he's like, if you only knew all the love that I found, right? And it's very similar in a sense, like, man, I found these great kind of tools over the last couple of years that have profoundly changed my mental health and profoundly changed the way that I live my life on a daily basis. And it sounds, you sound similarly situated with your experience with ayahuasca. And all we're trying to do is just take that shit and just download it onto some other people's brains and say, hey, even if you don't go through it, you don't feel the same way that we feel, just know that it's possible, and know that there's, just like I try to talk about the financial world, man, just know there's another angle out there, right?
Yes. And before, bro, my ego wouldn't even allow me to listen to anything else. Bro, I was so, even if somebody else would say they're making money, I wouldn't even believe them, bro. I wouldn't even believe anybody else could be making money because only I could, or only I was. You know, my ego was so fucking big. You know what? Let me end this shit on day four of my ayahuasca trip, bro. Day four of my ayahuasca trip. This was after day three, where I was really able to let go of a lot of things and stop fighting. I thought I was done with that part, bro. And I went into day four with almost with the same ego as day one and day two. And I was ready to figure out like what my purpose was, like why I'm here on this earth, like what, you know, what does the world want from me? You know, that kind of thing. Like that was my intention when I came into day four, right? Before I took the medicine. And by the way, like they got different ways of making this medicine, right? So this shit is brewed in Peru, this shit is brewed in Colombia, this shit is brewed, you know, basically in these places. And they flew in actually one of the shamans, I guess, from a group in Colombia was there my last day, my day four. And they, you know, it was a different concoction, and then every single brew has a different vibe to it, bro. So every different shaman and every different group and every different brew that we had, it had a different vibe to it, because it was like group things that were going on as well. Remember, I'm doing this shit with 50 people. I'm in a room with 50 mattresses,
right,
and 50 fucking buckets and 50 rolls of toilet paper. And there's people going through crazy shit right next to me, literally right next to me. You're listening to people throwing up and screaming at the top of their fucking lungs right next to you, bro, right next to you. So, you know, it's also difficult as well to have your own path and try to block some of this other stuff out. But you realize, like, everybody in there is sick. Everybody in there is trying to get healed. Everybody in there has their own path and their own purpose. But there's a group vibe that's going on in there as well. Sometimes it's mellow. It's very subtle. But there's definitely a group vibe. Day one was very – everybody was laughing. Everybody was freaking enjoying it. Everybody was – you know, there was a lot of singing. There was a lot of freaking dancing. There was a lot of, you know, that kind of stuff. Day two was like deep, evil, man. It was like go through to your freaking soul, man. And day four was just kind of like the culmination. But the ayahuasca had different plans for me, bro. Day four – I thought I was done with my ego, but I wasn't. Day four was me in a physical battle with my ego and just looking and connecting with my ego and all the damaging things that it does to me and all the processes that it's taken over in my mind that I needed to take back control out of. And, bro, I was in a physical battle, legit, for 8 hours with my ego. Like, I had to move myself out of the ceremony because everybody was done. Everybody was ready to sit around and talk about their trip. I wasn't done, bro. I had to move myself out, and I literally was trying to contort my body in ways that could make me throw up so that I could get rid of this thing, right? So I could get rid of my ego. I was like, yo, you don't fucking belong here. And I was yelling it. Chris, man, I was yelling it, you know? And I was like screaming, bro. That's how fucking intense it was. And then finally, I found my breath again. I found my breath, and the shaman came over and like did a little ritual for me or whatever. So I kind of calmed down a little bit, and I found my breath. And then I went into, you know, that space mentally where you're not sleeping, but you're not awake.
Yeah, sleep paralysis.
But you're awake. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. I went into that state.
I used to be afraid of it, and now I embrace it. It used to scare the shit out of me.
Oh my God.
And now I always just tell myself, bro, wow, this is the most comfortable you can get without being asleep, so enjoy it.
Bro, so I got there, and it was for an hour and a half, and I was outside, there was a breeze, like, I finally realized, like, okay, it's not supposed to leave, like, my ego is not supposed to leave, and all ego is not bad. It's just, I needed to make a pact. I needed to make a contract with this ego and just be like, okay, listen, I need you for some shit and other shit. You gotta, you know, I can't allow you to take over here,
right?
You know, so it was like finally the realization that I didn't have to fight like that. And yo, and it was probably that hour and a half, bro, and I still remember it. And it's only because I'm talking to you that I'm remembering what the feeling of. I remember coming out of that hour and a half, bro. I've never felt better in my entire fucking life, bro. It was some spiritual shit. It was some, I don't know what you want to call it. It was some out of body kind of thing. I mean, all of it was really out of body, but this one in particular was just like the most calm I've ever felt in my entire life, bro. And then after that, I was just like, all right, I know what I got to do, you know? So, and then after that too, bro, it was like, I couldn't lie to me. You can't lie to yourself anymore, bro. After you resonate with shit like that, you can't just come home and bullshit yourself anymore.
Right.
So anything that tries to pull you back towards your old habits, anything that it does, you feel 10 times worse. You internalize it 10 times worse. You can't fucking lie anymore. You can't lie to yourself anymore. You can't bullshit yourself anymore. You got no choice but to do what your instinct has always wanted you to do, but your mind has always talked you fucking out of it. Your thoughts have always talked you out of what your instinct has told you, like, is the right fucking way to go. But we just don't want to listen to it because of our thoughts, of our ego, of our, you know, this, that, whatever. So That's the kind of frequency I just want to be vibing on all the fucking time now, bro. That's it. And if I'm not up there, something's wrong, man. Something's wrong. Something's got to go. I got more work to do, you know, so that's where I'm at, bro.
And the word that always keeps coming to mind for me, you know, in the last couple of years for me, kind of learning how to meditate and just looking at mental health a different way than I have and learning how to breathe again. All the things that you're talking about, dealing with the ego and getting into the stage of sleep paralysis like we were just talking about. The one word that's kind of always followed me has been surrender. You know, you have to surrender. You have to surrender.
Yep.
You have to surrender your ego. You have to, you know, I used to have panic attacks all the time. You have to surrender that this is how you feel. And a lot of panicking is fear of death, too. And that I've found can be alleviated by just surrendering to the fact that we all die. And it's a very natural thing. And in some ways, it's extraordinary that I'm 36 and that I've made it this long, you know, that
yeah.
When you get to that point, when you can surrender, all of a sudden, it doesn't matter in the morning. You know, you laugh when the guy at the fucking bagel place asks you if you want a poppy seed or a sesame seed bagel. You're like, listen, man, you know, I don't have an answer for you, brother, but whatever you put in the fucking bag, I'm going to eat, man. You know, you wake up in the morning, you think about surrendering your ego, you think about just surrendering to life, surrendering to the bad things that you feel too. You know, the agitation, the fucking, the fight or flight shit when you're trading, your ego, I keep coming back to that, but like you just keep saying it, and surrendering to that and not bullshitting yourself, like you just said, right? Knowing, hey, here's my bad qualities. This is the worst shit about me, man. Here's the things I can't get away from. You know, you just surrender to that.
Yep.
It's like meditating. You just surrender. And then all of a sudden, again, you leave your house in the morning and you see a guy arguing with another guy. Oh, you scratched the bumper on my car. And it's just like, what the fuck are these guys talking about? You know, like, what are you talking about? You're talking about a little mark on a piece of material on a thing that gets you around town? Like, dude, we're on some different shit over here at my house, right?
Yeah, man. And it's a beautiful place to be in. But it's a difficult place to stay in, Chris. It really is a difficult place to stay in. That's what I'm realizing, you know, because again, like we have to interact. You have to interact with all types of frequencies, you know, and I would assume that's why some of the monks that you probably, that you follow or some of the ones that you were quoting earlier, like, you kind of have to leave it all. You have to leave it all because you can't jeopardize that mental space anymore. You can't jeopardize it if you're trying to obtain, you know, a certain mental clarity within yourself, or you're trying to obtain certain answers within yourself. And that's another reason why most people can't achieve any of this stuff, because they never surrender, right? They never surrender. They're never in a place where they allow themselves to surrender. Even when they're in the shower, they're in the worst fucking mood ever.
Right.
And even when, no matter where they are, they bring that bullshit with them. No matter where they, and they can never step outside to just breathe that fresh air and just take a couple breaths and be like, oh, okay, all right, I'm cool. You know,
and it's
just something as simple as that.
You do have to work on it.
Not do it.
You have to work on it every day, man. The one common thread between people that go to therapy, people that meditate, people that do yoga, even jujitsu, you have to work. You have to stay at it. You have to work on yourself every single day, man. I had one boss who I know doesn't like me now because he doesn't like the terms that I left on. But he said to me something at one point that I'll remember for the rest of my life, which is we're all on a long learning track. He said that I was working at a bar, you know, and I spilled a drink or something. And that's how he responded. He said, it's all right, we're all on a long learning track or something. And I was like, man, that is some of the most profound shit I've ever heard. And it's also true. We're growing and we're learning throughout our entire lives, right? So what do you seek? Do you just seek the money, or are you seeking some type of, you know, enlightenment that's outside of even what you're talking about? Now you had this great experience on ayahuasca, but the question becomes, how do I get up tomorrow morning and remind myself that there is this perspective out there? Because if I wake up in fucking Lower Manhattan every day, I know the subway and the negativity and all these fucking people around me are just going to drag me back into the mindset that I was in to begin with, man. And the answer is, you got to work at it.
You got so uncomfortable.
What's that?
you got so uncomfortable when we were at dinner. You remember when you showed up to dinner when we were in Lower Manhattan? We went to, what it was, ABC Kitchen, bro.
That's like, what it was called,
you were visibly, like, on edge, on a very steep fucking edge. And I enjoyed it so much watching it. I never told you about this, but I enjoyed it. I really did fucking enjoy it, because the second you walked in, like, you were just like, oh God, oh God, oh God. Oh, and I could see it. I could see it in your, I could see it in your eyes, and I could see it going around in your head. And then you were like, dude, you know, what's going on? Are we being seated? Like, you were kind of anxious to sit down. And then it was just like a dash for the bar. It was like, okay, where's the fucking bar? Let me go get a fucking drink. And then once we sat down, once we started to eat, once we started to have good conversation, then you were like, yo, this place is great, man. Great food, and it really is all about the vibes, bro. It's just about the vibes that we're throwing out there, and the vibes that we're used to, you know, feeling when we're in certain scenarios, bro. Lower Manhattan is motherfucking chaos, bro. It is chaos, 24 hours a day, bro. Fucking chaos, man.
Well, let me just tell you, man. That dinner, me, you, we had a couple of our other friends there, and your lady. Came at a point in my life, you know, where I had just left my job that I was working at up through mid-June. I had just left. You know, I was entertaining new projects. I wanted to spend more time doing what I'm doing right now, which is shooting the shit with people on the podcast. I got to tell you, man, that dinner and the company and the people that we sat with, easily, hands down, one of the best experiences I've had probably in my life, man. That when we got seated... And we started to shoot the shit. I mean, we were there for 2-3 hours. People that had gotten seated after us were leaving before we left. That was one of the better that was one of the better points in my life, man. I just got to tell you, that was a special night. I actually enjoyed that very much. And again, just to go back to what we were saying, the one example I wanted to bring up to you when you're talking about these different levels of enlightenment. It's like, what about this, you know, this Buddhist monk that lit himself on fire? Right, the dude just sat down.
Ooh,
you remember that? It was in the 60s.
No.
There was a Vietnamese Buddhist monk. He's on the cover of one of the Rage Against the Machine albums. He's just sitting there. There's this incredible picture.
Oh, that was him. That was him.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Great album.
Yeah. It was a fucking good album too. But you know, the guy was protesting persecution of Buddhist monks, I think. And so he just sat down and poured gasoline all over himself and just said, I'm going to light myself on fire. The point I wanted to make by bringing that up is, what kind of shit do you need to be on mentally to be like, all right, I'm just going to do this. You know, I'll die. It'll hurt. And then I'm just, you know, that'll be a wrap. You know, I'll make my point and that's it.
I'll tell you what, that motherfucker surrendered. I'll tell you what, that motherfucker's on another level of surrender.
Yeah, right? If you wanted to know if you ever need to know whether or not there's a state of enlightenment past where you are right now, just think, am I in the state of mind where I could light myself on fire and be cool with it? And if you're not, all right, if you're listening and you're not, know you still got motherfucking work to do on yourself.
There was a cat down in Costa Rica where we were at. He was from Scotland. There was actually two guys from Scotland there, and I realized how difficult it was for me to understand the Scottish accent. I couldn't understand a word these two were saying, man. But the one word that I could definitely tell, and it comes in great here for this one because you brought it up. He said surrender. Surrender. That's what he would say all the fucking time.
Is that right? Is
that
a true story?
Say all the time, man. It was hilarious, bro. Now every time I hear that word, bro, I hear his voice. Surrender. Surrender.
I don't know. We got to talk about your Scottish accent, man. I don't know if you're coming.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it's not. Maybe I know. Maybe I'm not even close with it, but shit.
Anyways, all right, Lucci, I think we should wrap it up, brother. What do you think, man? It's been 2 hours and 20 minutes of
Let's do it.
But you wanna pump the 3LT playbook real quick, because I didn't do it during the sponsors because I knew that you would be on, but I know that you're doing some new stuff. You got this 3LT playbook.
Yeah,
I checked out the website a couple days ago. There's some pretty nice pictures of you on there. It's a very fancy website. Why don't you tell people what the meat and potatoes is behind the flashy marketing?
You know what? the meat and potatoes is this conversation right here, Chris, because we're talking about how to unplug and how to unlearn all the shit that you think you know about the markets. And it's the same thing that you preach as well, like looking at it from a different perspective than what you read in the books, than what is thrown out everywhere, than what is the normal way of going about this stuff, the technical analysis of the world, the fundamental analysis, whatever you've read. You know, the market just doesn't work like that. And then you also don't work like you think you do.
Right.
You know, so the whole premise for the 3LT playbook was to uncover and unlearn a lot of those things. So there, it's based on three laws. The law number one is learn the markets, which is the first one. You know, you got to learn the technical skills of it, which most people come to the markets with the wrong mind frame, especially when they're gung ho on fucking technical analysis. You need a lot more than that right now if you're going to exist. And then law two is the noise. It's the noise, the media. What role do they play in the whole game, which you uncover quite a bit in your podcast as well. And then law three is learn yourself. So that's the 3LT playbook. And it's basically, bro, it's all the shit that we talked about in this 2 hour long fucking conversation, but just on a more drilled down focus approach on how you're going to apply it to your own trading, develop your own strategy, one that works for you, and then getting the confidence. What I do, bro, is I give people the confidence that they don't need us. They don't need me anymore. They don't need a Chris. They don't need a Chris Irons. They don't need a fucking another guru. They don't need anybody else. They got the confidence. They got the tools.
Right.
And now they just got to put in the work. So that's kind of what the 3LT playbook is all about, man. So, yeah.
Well, usually I cut my guests off and then I do a little outro on my own, but we're going to do this one together. So what I'm going to say first and foremost is I appreciate you being a supporter through Patreon, man. Thank you very, very much. It means a lot to me. That is on some, you know, real shit. I mean that. I'm not just saying that because you're the guest. And also, I feel similarly situated to everybody that has been supporting me through Patreon. I appreciate you guys so much. You guys make the podcast happen. And Lucci, I'm telling you as a friend, and also as, you know, a supporter of mine, that I appreciate everything you've done. What I'm gonna do right now, though, is I'm gonna say we're the fuck out of here, and then you're gonna go peace. You think you can handle that?
I got it, baby.
All right.
I got it, baby.
Well, then we're the fuck out of here.
Peace and surrender.
All right, Lucci. I'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, man. We'll talk soon, baby.
All right. Bye-bye.